to you. You were born with power.
Very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how is it
now? But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
Struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how is it now?
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
Struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. And if you want to toll free long distance me, you can do that at 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. And don't forget that we are broadcasting live on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. Also, you can email me at Liz Brown, LizzBrown, at sbcglobal.net. Any kind of, every kind of, all kinds of ways. You got my digits? You can get in touch with me. 454-0400 is the phone number. We have been talking about on this show for some time. the issue of whether or not there is a litigation crisis. As a former defense attorney, and as an attorney, former attorney, or attorney that used to represent insurance companies, I follow this very, very closely, and with great dismay at the misinformation that is being put out about where we are as a nation on this issue. In fact, our man-child governor is taking a page out of the playbook that he hopes to be in charge of someday, out of George W. Bush's playbook, and he is scurrying around the state of Missouri on a tour to sell people on changing the rules as it pertains to medical malpractice and lawsuits, hoping to sell people on these changes. So we need to talk about this, and this is a very timely discussion given what the governor of Missouri is busy about doing. To facilitate this conversation this morning, I have Joanne Doroshow, the director of the Center for Justice and Democracy, joining us from New York. Joanne, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm outstanding. Joanne, is there a litigation crisis? Is there a medical malpractice litigation crisis?
Well, certainly there isn't in Missouri. I know that the data that has come out of the Department of Insurance there over the last year shows that claims are down, the payouts, the jury verdicts are all down in Missouri in medical malpractice cases. In fact, down pretty dramatically, and yet insurance premiums for doctors shot up 121% in the last year. So there's obviously some reason for premiums going up that has absolutely nothing to do with litigation, because there certainly is no crisis, litigation crisis in the medical malpractice area.
So then the data is inescapable. Insurance costs to consumers are up, particularly to doctors are up. What's causing the what's the reason for these for these incredible fees that the doctors have to pay?
Well, there's a pretty good reason for that, and it's very predictable, and everybody in the insurance industry knows it. And that is that when investment income for these companies drops, they always respond the same way, by suddenly raising rates on their policyholders. And this started in this country in the end of 2001 into 2002. You suddenly started hearing about this all over the country, rates for doctors going up, up, up. Meanwhile, they're screaming, oh, it's those jury verdicts. And yet you look at the data, and these verdicts are not going up, the claims are not going up, nothing in the legal system is causing this to happen. It's entirely due to the lost investment income by the insurance industry, and they're having to make up for that by raising rates on the backs of doctors and other policyholders.
And the New York Times recently did a article talking about this, and a study that had been engaged in looking at these rates.
Yeah, the New York Times did a pretty groundbreaking article just a couple of weeks ago, which I say groundbreaking because you often don't hear the honest facts being reported by some of these mainstream papers about what's really behind these rates shooting up. As they found, it is the investment income, that the lost investment income, that is the primary reason for this. all around the country. And, you know, it also leads you to the direct conclusion that if you're going to try to solve that problem for doctors by capping damage awards and making it more difficult for legitimately injured individuals to go to court, well, it's going to be devastating for those families, of course, but in addition, it's not going to do anything at all to help doctors with their insurance problems.
And let's back up a little bit, because there is a reason why insurance companies felt they needed to double or even triple their rates on doctors. They slashed their own prices a while ago.
Yeah, which is all part of the, again, it's a very predictable cycle. This is something, how the industry operates. When they're making, well, just to back up for a second, insurance companies make most of their money through their investment income by investing the premiums that they collect.
So they don't make their money by what they charge us for insurance coverage.
Exactly. In fact, in some years they're expected to even take a loss on that when they're making so much money on their investments. And during the 1990s, all that period when they were doing so well with their assets in the market, and particularly the bond market, that's where most medical malpractice insurers invest, they had slashed prices so much because it's like a premium, it's like a price war that goes on. They're doing everything they can to collect premium dollars to invest, and so prices get slashed and slashed and slashed because there's a lot of competition in the market for those dollars. And so they stayed artificially low for about 17 years. In fact, since the last time Missouri passed a cap on damages, which was in 1986, this is what happened. The same kind of problem was happening in the mid-80s. Rates had suddenly shot up for doctors. The legislature came in and passed a very severe cap on damages and other restrictions. And most people forget that that was even on the books. But then for about 17 years, you didn't hear a peep about this issue because, again, rates were low. The doctors weren't complaining. Nobody was complaining. Well, all of a sudden, 2001, 2002, because of this change in the economy, rates shot up again. And doctors were screaming. I mean, no wonder they were screaming. It was like sticker shock for them. But it had absolutely nothing to do with the legal system. This was part of the investment cycle. And the fact that Missouri already had a cap on damages and has had one since 1986 is clear proof that capping damages is not the solution to this problem.
And if we just kind of look at the whole industry of insurance, most people who pay their insurance don't make a claim. So these companies have tons of money to invest.
Yes, tons. And I'll tell you, last year, just because they had raised premiums so high on doctors, the insurance industry made more money than ever in its history. I mean, they are making so much money. They're laughing all the way to the bank, as these legislatures and your state very tragically just did, decided to try to take it out on the patients and on the injured people in your state and yet again cap damage awards and create other kinds of obstacles for people to go to court. And it's a very tragic situation for families in the state of Missouri that they now are going to have even more obstacles placed in their way.
And this isn't just happening in the state of Missouri. This is happening all across the country.
That's right. Unfortunately, there are a lot of politicians who are in the pockets of the insurance industry, and all these laws are doing is they're taking money out of the hands of catastrophically injured children and senior citizens and other legitimately injured people and putting them back into the pockets of the insurance companies. And unfortunately, most politicians in this country are not listening to the victims and the patients, the people that really have no voice in this debate. They're listening to what the insurance companies and the medical lobbies are telling them.
But also, Joanna, I have to say that I believe that there's also an additional reason why we're seeing such a huge push for limiting putting caps on claims. One, because I see this as a very partisan thing, one of the ways that, or if not the way, that the Democratic Party gets its money is through trial attorneys. Trial attorneys get their money based upon the cases that they're able to win. So if you make it impossible for this one group of people to make a lot of money, then not only have you rewarded your supporters, the Republicans have rewarded their supporters, but they've also damaged their opponent with the same bullet. They've hit two people with the same bullet.
Yeah, I mean, that is certainly a big reason behind this, according to a lot of people that have not only written about that, but, you know, there are some conservative interest groups that have actually gone on record stating that if we can just cap these damages and make it harder for people to go to court, we're going to take money out of the hands of trial lawyers, and we'll be able to defund the Democratic Party. So there are very serious political motives behind this. This whole tort reform business was something that Karl Rove, back when he was working with then-Governor Bush in Texas in the mid-90s, decided was going to be an important issue for the governor to start spearheading because he saw it for precisely those political reasons. And back in 95, then-Governor Bush passed some very severe tort reforms in Texas and made it a big campaign issue for himself. And then you saw all of the big corporations in Texas and around, you know, the state and all the industries that were benefiting dumping tons of money into his presidential campaign. And Texans for Public Justice is a group down there that has done a lot of really good work on that. You can take a look at their website and see the kinds of money that have come into this administration as a result of these so-called tort reform efforts.
And unfortunately, Joanne, there has been a very the actions engaged in by George W. Bush and others that are supporting this issue, they've been very successful because unfortunately the people that are clearest about this issue are either lawyers like myself or people that have been injured and have seen the reason why they were injured and understand why it is so important that citizens be able to get redress. Unfortunately, a lot of people out there don't look at it that way, and that they're buying into this whole idea of those big bad lawyers are gouging people, and we need to fix a system that's not broken.
Right, and you'll notice that most of the PR, the public relations behind this movement, is directed squarely at lawyers. Mm-hmm. It's not nobody talks about injured people because injured people are the average American. Does not want this kind of restriction on their constitutional rights.
When they clearly understand what this means, the average American does not want this.
That's exactly right. They don't. They don't want their right to jury trial taken away. They don't want a child who was catastrophically injured in a wheelchair for the rest of their life
due to the
being
negligence
limited in terms of the compensation they can get.
And when we look at and we have to take a break, Joanne, but when we come back, I'd like to talk about what are the real reasons for why do people go to court and how many people do in fact go to court and what are some of the things that we can do if we want to address this system? What are some real fair ways to address the issue of these skyrocketing costs for doctors? My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. I am talking to Joanne Doroshow, the director of the Center for Justice and Democracy, joining us from New York. We have to take a break, but after that, we'll be right back with more of this discussion.
You're listening to the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Good morning, St. Louis. 29 minutes after the hour of 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Open from American Express. Northbound 270 at 44 Marshall. Look for slight delays. Eastbound 70 between 370 and the Blanchette Bridge is on the move. Westbound 270 from West Florissant into Graham Hanley is looking good at this hour. Westbound 5570 at the Poplar Street Bridge, no problems there. Eastbound 44 between 141 and 270 is on the move. And you have a number of construction sites that are still going on with some temporary work and lane closures. So just use caution and slow up through those work zones. All your other approaches into the Poplar Street Bridge and into downtown, you can expect no delays at this hour. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Open from American Express. Open, how American Express serves small business. To learn more, visit open.com or call 1-800-NOW-OPEN. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. For today, partly sunny with a high in the lower 50s. This evening, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s. For Thursday, partly sunny early in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy with a high in the mid-50s. And then on Friday, cloudy, chance of showers in the morning, then chance of showers and or a possible thunderstorm by the afternoon with a high in the 50s. Currently, we have some clouds and 33 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 32. Liz Brown is out as well as for the rest of this week, I believe. She may be in tomorrow. But we're going to bring you more of the best of the wake-up call right now. This is AM 920 WGNU. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Call Akbar Electrical for any of your residential or commercial electrical service needs. Mention this ad for a discount. Akbar, 382-2568, 314-382-2568.
Prizes awarded on WGNU will be held for pickup at the radio station for 30 days. After 30 days, all items become the sole property of WGNU Radio to be disposed of at our discretion. In the case of event tickets, tickets will be held for 30 days or until the date of the event, whichever comes first. Prizes must be picked up at our studios, which are located at 265 Union Boulevard in St. Louis, unless otherwise specified.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
Hi, this is Brett Rosen letting you know my show will be on every Thursday from 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock. Yeah, I'll make you think. You may find yourself saying, oh my God, it burns, it burns. It only hurt for a minute. See you then.
Everything the engineer would move, what if the engineer wanted a bite to eat? He let the monkey sit on.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
More of the best of the Wake-Up Call is on the way right now.
All things. things ain't what they used to be. No, no, oh, wasted on the ocean.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. I'm talking to Joanne Doroshow, the director of the Center for Justice and Democracy, joining us from New York. And we're talking about the root of a malpractice insurance increases. Joanne, welcome back.
Thanks.
Could you talk to us about why do people sue hospitals?
Well, The first thing to know is that most people don't sue. Only 1 in 8 who have been injured by medical negligence ever bring even a claim for compensation. I'm sure many of your listeners have had experiences like that through themselves or members of their family, and they know they didn't run to court to sue. But the families that do are usually the ones that have very severe injuries, you know, a child that is brain damaged and in a wheelchair for the rest of their life that needs a lot of care. They're the ones typically that go to court. Other reason sometimes people go to court is to get some kind of change in the hospital or the healthcare agency that caused the malpractice in the first place, because there are a lot of people that want justice, and that's why they turn to the courts, and they feel
keeps people from brawling in the streets.
Yes, exactly, and it's a very important system to have in place, because otherwise there'd be anarchy. And it gives people an outlet. It gives people a place to go, and to try to see whether they can often get some kind of change to make sure that negligence doesn't happen again. And in fact, we know of many cases in the medical malpractice area where lawsuits as a result of some horrible malpractice has led to a safety change in the practices of the hospital. So we all benefit from these lawsuits, whether or not we ever go to court.
And we can even use the case that has been reported on and reported on and reported on recently, Terry Schiavo. Her husband sued successfully for the injuries that his wife suffered.
Well, right. There was a medical malpractice situation in her injury, and yeah, he did.
And he was able to get money to care for her for 15 years.
That's right, and that's usually what happens with that money. It goes right back into the healthcare system. Nobody's going to Bermuda on that money. It's being used to take care of people that are hurt, and frankly, if that money isn't there and available, then the taxpayer ends up paying, as this, you know, these people have to go on state assistance. So all this does is when you limit people's ability to go to court, it just simply shifts the cost of these injuries away from the wrongdoer onto possibly the taxpayer.
Let me get to a call here. You have a question for our guest.
Yeah, good morning, Liz, and good morning, Joanne, your guest. I know, Liz, you're an attorney, but about tort reform, how soon will the premium go down or stay steady since there's tort reform being brought up and the claims are down?
Thanks for your call or question. Joanne, we're not hearing from the insurance companies that any kind of guarantee that rates are going to go down if they get additional tort reform.
Well, they've never made that guarantee, mm-hmm. and you know, in all the years I've been working on this issue, because they know very well that these laws do absolutely nothing to bring rates down. But I will tell you that what is happening in the market around the country, whether or not states pass tort reform, is that this sudden, what's called the hard market, when rates shoot up, that's been going on for about 2-3 years now, it's over. Rates are now coming down in every state, and so what you're going to probably see in Missouri is rates starting to come down for doctors. The insurance company is going to start taking credit for that by capping damages. I hope your listeners know that that's not going to be the reason. You look at states like Washington State, for example, has almost nothing on the books tort reform-wise, no caps on damages. Their major medical malpractice insurer insures 70% of the doctors in that state, just asked for a 7% 7.7% rate reduction. And that's what we're going to start to see around the country. What I'm fearful of is that the insurance industry and the medical lobbies, you know, in states like yours where suddenly caps have passed again, are going to start attributing that to the limits on the legal system, whereas really it's got nothing to do with that. It's got to do with the fact that the hard market is over. Rates are coming down everywhere, and they're going to stay down for probably another 10 years or so until a new hard market comes in. And I promise you, if anybody who's listening here is listening, 10 years from now, you're going to see rates in Missouri shoot up again for doctors because the state refuses to do what is the only real solution to this problem to keep it from happening again, and that is to get control over the insurance industry through better and stronger regulation of that industry, which does not exist in your state. It doesn't exist in Illinois. It doesn't exist in most states in the country right now.
And we could get control over the insurance agency or the insurance industry by passing a few laws, couldn't we?
It's easy to do. I mean, you know, these are easy laws in terms of they're not that complicated. All you need to do is, for example, put a requirement that rates need to be approved before they go into effect by the insurance department, and there should be a hearing. Whenever, like with utilities, there should be a hearing when a company comes in for more than a 15% rate hike, there should be a public hearing on that. They need to open up
their books. That's not hard to do, is it?
Shouldn't be, right? It should be obvious, I think. But the states refuse to go that route. Your governor refuses to get control over this industry, and what's going to happen is, you know, basically insurance companies charge whatever they want. And until you stop them from doing that and getting control over these practices, these kinds of crises are going to continue and continue and continue.
And in terms of people finding or getting a copy of this study that came out and this report that the New York Times did, where can people go to get this, Joanne?
Well, we have lots of stuff on our website, and we have even a little explanation of that New York Times article, and they should go to our site, which is centerjd.org. It's CENTERJD.ORG. And we have a whole page on medical malpractice issues and all kinds of other civil justice issues.
Very good. I want to thank you, Joanne Doroshow, Director of the Center for Justice and Democracy, for joining us on the Wake Up Call this morning.
Thanks so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown, Wake Up Call. I will be back after this break. My number here is 454-0400.
You're listening to the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. We'll be back with more following these breaks.
Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 till 4 on AM 920. WGNU discusses the issues that matter most to you every day. And if you have a relationship problem with a friend, coworker, or family member, it really matters to me. So call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA. Tune in every Monday through Friday afternoon from 2 until 4 and take on the day with me, Dr. Laura, on AM 920 WGNU.
This is Decent Guy Don, the original conspiracy hunter. You know, the guy that keeps you up to date on all the good guys and the bad guys out of the Council of Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Illuminati crowd, and assorted other characters who are squeezing the life out of our great American country. Tune in every evening to hear the thunderous crash as I pull the linchpin from the foundations of the House of the New World Order as it crashes down at 7 p.m. Monday through Friday with the Conspiracy Hunter right here at WGNU 920 a.m.
Make your holiday exciting by celebrating Christmas New Orleans style.
Come for the food.
Come for the art.
Come for the history.
Come for the sweet sounds of jazz.
Visit NewOrleansOnline.com to plan a December getaway filled with Réveillon feasts, free concerts, French Quarter shopping, and all the excitement of Harrah's Casino. And make it last with discounted hotel rates, courtesy of Papa Noel himself. Visit NewOrleansOnline.com today to get your free guide with more than $2,400 in coupons and jazz up your December New Orleans style.
Come for the fun.
Come feel good.
Come for the beauty. Come for the
spirit, heart, and soul.
Come for it all.
Come fall in love with New Orleans all over again.
Discover Christmas New Orleans style at NewOrleansOnline.com.
Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
And welcome back. We're going to bring you back with more of the best of the Wake-Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
920 WGNU. And, of course, as always, we are broadcasting live on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. My email address is Liz Brown, LizBrown, at sbcglobal.net. Those are our digits. You need to get to us. And I want you to imagine, if you will, that you're in a place called Bjorn, Texas. And you're watching a man by the name of Howard Gills. Because Howard Gills was beginning to think that he would never get a decent shot at the wild hog he was looking at. But about an hour into the hunt, the beast finally moved into the rifle's sights. Howard fired, all with a click of the mouse. That's right, Howard was in his home office in San Antonio, aiming at this animal using a program on his computer. How's that sound? Are there some issues we should be concerned with this phenomenon? Is this real? Is this really happening, or is this something that maybe is just something that happened on TV? Well, to facilitate this conversation about video hunting, I have with me the president and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States, joining us from Washington, D.C., Wayne Pasali. Wayne, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. Is this really happening?
Well, Liz, it actually is happening. We thought that this was almost a joke or a scam when we first learned about it. And the idea is that there are, in this country, about 1,000 exotic hunting ranches where animals are taken from Africa or Asia or bred here in the United States, exotic animals.
These are non-indigenous animals to the area.
Right. These are not native species. So these are black buck antelope or giraffe or lions from Africa or whatever creature you can imagine lives in these particular regions. Some of them are imported, but many of them are here, and then they're bred once they're here. and they're released in fenced enclosures on what we refer to as canned hunting operations. And hunters, trophy hunters, look at a menu of animals, and there are different prices for different animals. So it might be $300 for a wild boar, it might be $1,500 for a black buck antelope, it might be $3,000 for a giraffe. And you can choose to shoot whatever animal you want, and you will basically be placed right near one of these animals, and animals will be herded in front of you to shoot. And this is an activity which we find repugnant, inhumane, unsporting, and we've been trying to campaign to stop it.
To say the least, how is that hunting when the animals are herded in front of your gun?
Well, that's our view, once the trophy's on the wall, I guess you can concoct any story you want. You can claim that you went to Tanzania or Botswana and had a one-on-one confrontation with the animal, and the person hearing the story won't know any better because the animal that's mounted on the wall, I can't tell you that he or she was basically, you know, on a small little ranch from which the animal could not escape, had been fed corn through an automated feeder, had a non-threatening human presence around much of the time except when people would come with guns and shoot them for the trophies, not eat the meat, simply send the body to the taxidermist to have the head and the body mounted for a trophy room. But that, if that wasn't bad enough, what we've seen is now an internet-based component to this, where these hunting ranches have developed, a couple of them, have developed the idea of a mounted camera and a weapon on a mechanized tripod. So if you sign up through liveshot.com, which is one of the websites, live-shot.com, you can pay and then see the animal through this live webcam feed and then manipulate the firearm with your mouse and then click and shoot. And the first animal was shot not long ago. A second animal is slated to be shot soon by a quadriplegic in Indiana. And if this gets steam, then you don't have to go to the wild to hunt. You don't even have to go to one of these canned hunting ranches. You can just shoot from the comfort of your home or your office, and then they'll have someone on site to collect the animal if the animal doesn't escape wounded, and then they will have it taxidermied and sent to your home. So you can have the entire hunting experience from your home.
While you're at work or on your lunch break.
Yes.
And what's interesting about this, Wayne, is there are a number of people, surprising people, that are in opposition to this.
Right. Well, the Humane Society of the United States, the group that I work for, often does not see eye to eye with the National Rifle Association.
NRA.
Yeah. Or the Safari Club International, which is a group of elitist trophy hunters that travel the world to shoot rare animals in competitive hunts. And these guys compete against one another to see who can amass a greater diversity of species killed and have the bigger animals. In order to get all the Safari Club's different awards, you have to shoot 322 different species of animals. So one of them is the Africa Big Five. So if you shoot a lion, a leopard, an elephant, a rhino, and a Cape Buffalo, you get this award from the Safari Club. They have 29 of these hunting achievement awards, as they're called. So needless to say, we don't see eye to eye with a group like that. You know, we believe that animals should be treated mercifully and compassionately, and that they're worthy of respectful treatment, not to be treated just as a collection of potential trophies and shot because someone doesn't have something better to do in terms of their
and lots of money to spend it on.
Yeah, lots of money to spend it on. And the other aspect of this is they're bilking the taxpayers. A lot of these guys, and we're going to be announcing the results of an investigation soon, they go on these hunts to Africa or Asia or some other area across the globe, and they maybe spend $20,000 or $30,000 on their hunt, and then they collect the animals as trophies, and they ship them back to the United States, and they call a portion of their home a museum.
Oh,
and
for
then
crying
they
out
a,
loud.
They get a tax deduction for donating the animals to a museum, so they can write off 35% of their entire trip.
And in the meantime, we're having a new change in bankruptcy laws where people that legitimately need to discharge their debts can no longer do so.
Right. And here you have these elitist trophy hunters scamming the public with their scheme to set up home museums or to donate these to a museum for a short time, and they get them back.
Now, given all of that description that you've given of these elitist types of clubs, and people understand the NRA, why would the NRA and these elitist clubs be on the same side of this issue with you all?
This is one of the, we've rarely seen a form of hunting that the NRA or the Safari Club would not defend. I mean, they defend bear baiting, where you put out food for bears and shoot them while they feed. They defend these canned hunting practices. They defend releasing pheasants and dumping them in the woods just before hunters come out and shooting them. Use of packs of dogs with radio telemetry collars to chase mountain lions or bobcats or bears and shoot them out of trees. So we're often at odds. So they defend almost anything. But even this seemed too much for them to defend. And they criticized this as something that was not a form of hunting that they recognized, and that you had to be out with the animal to shoot the animal, and that you couldn't do it from a computer and do it ethically. It remains to be seen whether they will actually support the federal legislation that we seek to introduce soon when the Congress returns from its Easter break in early April, and we'll get legislation introduced. We'll see if these groups do in fact support a ban on internet hunting, where people can shoot from their home or their office with a click of a mouse from a live cam feed of animals herded in front of a camera.
Well, Wayne, what's going through my mind as you're talking about their opposition to this, and we did try to get someone from the NRA on to join us on this show, actually it would be taking money out of their pockets if this becomes the rage, wouldn't it?
Well, at some level, but, the NRA...
If you don't have to go out and buy five or six or seven types of guns to do your hunting, you rely upon this one gun on a tripod, and these other exotic companies, there's no reason to take a trip to Africa if you can shoot a boar, a wild boar, on these preserves and without going through them.
Well, that's actually a very good point, because a lot of the fees that do accrue to these guides and outfitters come from their guiding fees.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously there are the associated costs of the firearms, the ammunition, the travel, all that.
It's really no less unsporting than anything else that they promote.
Right, right. I mean, the only difference here is the separation, that you can shoot an animal from thousands of miles away, that previously, at least you had to be within a couple of hundred yards.
But if you're going to shoot a bear while he's eating, or an animal in a tree, or you're going to put the animal there to be shot, I don't see
I think that you're making great points, and I think that all of these activities are highly unsporting. It's just a question of degree, and that this was so outside the bounds of what the public comes to expect from hunting, that even these groups that apologize for any form of wildlife killing were put in an awkward position of defending it. So they said, okay, well, this goes beyond the line. And, we hope that they can make some of these future judgments in this regard, because the groups do have power, and they do speak for a segment of the populace. I would think that most gun owners would find all this canned hunting nonsense out of step and out of bounds. There have been surveys that show that even most hunters find these practices to be repugnant and want to see them stopped.
But there's also something very, very unique that this liveshot.com, desktop hunting as it's called, brings to the discussion, and that's the issue of public safety.
Absolutely. If you can set up a firearm on a mechanized tripod with a camera and click and shoot and kill an animal, obviously that could be a practice run for someone setting this up to use it to harm people. So I don't think that should be lost on any of your listeners, Liz, that this is something that's dangerous for society. It's potentially a dry run for somebody who wants to set up something on the top of a building or some other concealed area and shoot remotely. And how would you find out where this person was shooting from?
And also there are some homeland security issues involved with this too.
Sure. I mean, of course. I mean, this could be a obviously, terrorists are always trying to stay a step ahead of law enforcement and figure out very creative ways to engage in their activities. And here we have somebody in the hunting world basically setting up something that could be duplicated by a person who had really ill intentions for people here in the United States.
And also, if we take a look at the laws that are gradually being placed on the books that require background checks of individuals before they fire a gun, I'm a lawyer, so I'm just wondering about the legal challenge. If a person could truly challenge this legally and say that, I don't have to have a background check because I'm not technically, I'm not firing the gun.
Sure, you don't own the weapon.
There you go.
You don't own the camera. You don't own anything. All you engage in is a commercial transaction with this canned hunting ranch, and you can sign up, right through the website, liveshot.com.
And you could also be 12 years old and do this.
Well, and it's interesting. Here's in the state of
You've been listening to the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Up next, more news, weather, and traffic, followed by more of the best of the wake-up call.
There's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound,
that's below me. The issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger.
He's a true gentleman who reflected the best in America's character.
President Bush speaks to the nation about the late Gerald Ford. He died at his home in Rancho Mirage, California last night. More on his life now from ABC's Vic Ratner.
His name was not originally Gerald Ford. He was born Leslie Lynch King, but later took the name Ford from his stepfather, whom he adored. He was the only American president never elected. Appointed vice president, he then assumed the White House job when President Richard Nixon resigned over Watergate.
Marty Allen, a close friend of Mr. Ford's and the chairman of the Gerald R. Ford Foundation, says Ford accepted a job that few at the time might have wanted when he got the proposition from President Nixon. And he then, as Vic just said, seceded him and eventually pardoned Mr. Nixon for crimes that were committed as a part of the Watergate scandal.
He was a patriot rather than a partisan. And he knew the effect it would have on him politically, but he did not let that stop him from a decision that he felt strongly about.
As for the funeral,
the Ford family worked out plans with local officials years ago for some sort of viewing or service here in the California desert. Those plans have yet to be announced, but most likely a church in Palm Desert will be the venue. Mr. Ford will be buried at his presidential library in Grand Rapids, Michigan, following his state funeral in Washington, D.C.
ABC's Bob Hart in Palm Springs, California. Again, Gerald Ford was 93 years old. A plane carrying British Prime Minister Tony Blair and his family skidded off of the runway at Miami International Airport last night. The family was headed to Florida for a vacation. No one was hurt. The British Airways jet they were on wasn't damaged. James Brown's body will lie in repose at Harlem's Apollo Theater Thursday. The soul legend made his debut there. Brown died on Christmas morning. This is ABC News.
My cough isn't just a cough. I've got a stuffy nose, too. That's why Robitussin CF is my Robitussin.
I have a cough, and I have to hit the road, so I take my Robitussin with me. Robitussin cough gels.
I've got the flu, fever, body aches. That's why Robitussin cough, cold, and flu is my Robitussin.
Robitussin has formulas for coughs, for colds, for congestion, and for flu. So no matter what you've got, there's Robitussin Relief with your name on it. Use as directed.
Hi, Susie. Thanks for watching my kids.
Good timing. I'm making rich chocolate Ovaltine.
Ooh, my kids love chocolate milk.
So do mine. But I didn't make it for them. This Ovaltine's for us.
Really?
Hey, adults love the taste, too. Plus, I drink rich chocolate Ovaltine every day because it's high in calcium and antioxidants like vitamins A, C, and E. Ovaltine even has iron I need, which I can't get from Nesquik powder or milk alone.
Mmm, Ovaltine is good.
And it's loaded with vitamins and minerals. Nesquik powder doesn't come close.
More Ovaltine, please.
Forecasters are watching another big storm, which could cause some major problems for travelers in the West as they head home from their holiday vacations. Here's ABC's Phil Gross.
Even before the storm really came ashore, it brought strong winds, especially in Nevada. Gusts over 100 miles an hour stopped flights in Reno and blew over tractor trailers in Washoe Valley. Power was out in some areas Tuesday night, and Tahoe ski resorts, though looking forward to the fresh powder the storm will bring, had to close the lifts because of the wind. The worst news is, as this storm moves cross-country, it could be every bit as disruptive to holiday travel as last week's storm was, making the trip home as bad as the trip out. Gil Gross, ABC News, Los Angeles.
All right, take a look at your belly. The more it sticks out, the greater your risk of heart disease. A new study by healthcare provider Kaiser Permanente of Northern California says it's almost as good an indicator of your chances of developing the disease as the test your doctor gives you. And it's easy to reduce the risk factor, the study says, lose the gut. I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU newsroom.
This report of WGNU News is brought to you by Open from American Express. I'm Peyton Colston. In the news, investigators are working to determine the cause of a small plane crash in North County. The plane went down last night in a yard near Vail and Eagle Estates in Blackjack. Police say the pilot was injured, but his injuries are not considered life-threatening. No one on the ground was hurt, and no one else was on board the plane. The suspects in custody in connection with a recent string of suspected arson fires in North St. Louis. Police say the 21-year-old man is a former member of the St. Louis Fire Department's Explorers Career Development Program. He's suspected of setting more than a dozen fires in vacant buildings. The suspect faces no formal charges yet. And finally, St. Louis County Police are investigating the death of a man at Castlewood State Park. A hiker found the man's body yesterday afternoon on a path in the park off Kiefer Creek Road. The man's name has not been released. Police don't suspect foul play. And that's a WGNU News update for this hour. It's been brought to you by Open from American Express. Open, how American Express serves small business. To learn more, visit open.com or call 1-800-NOW-OPEN. I'm Peyton Colston with this hour's report of WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Chaser Plus. 55 westbound onto the Poplar Street Bridge is a report of an accident. It's been moved to Memorial Drive, but expect slight delays getting off that ramp. Northbound 270 at 44 Marshall, traffic congestion to report. Eastbound 70 from 370 through the Blanchett Bridge, there's no problems there. Westbound 270 from 55 through Chain of Rocks. Look for congestion going on this morning. Eastbound 44 from 141 through 270. No problems there. Westbound 40 at McCausland and Hanley. It looks good. And all of your other approaches into the Poplar Street Bridge as well as into downtown, you can expect some delays. There are some construction work zones that are still up and working, so just use caution as you roll through those work zones. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Chaser Plus. Do Chaser Plus pills really work? Yes, Chaser absorbs the toxins to help stop hangovers. Take it while you drink to help you wake up feeling great. Buy Chaser at Walgreens, CVS, and GNC. Please drink responsibly and don't drink and drive. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. Partly sunny today, high in the lower 50s this evening, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s for Thursday, partly sunny early in the morning, mostly cloudy throughout the day with a high in the mid-50s, and Friday, cloudy, chance of showers in the morning, and showers and thunderstorms are possible in the afternoon with a high in the 50s. Currently we have 33 degrees, Lambert Field is reporting 32. Stay tuned for more of the best of the wake-up call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of this 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Nobody is going to give it to you. You
Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress has been made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Feel me, brother. How can you sit
down? The heart truth is below me.
Is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. They struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal
citizens. So we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. Please don't forget, we are located on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. You can also email me at lizbrown, LIZZBROWN, at sbcglobal.net. Those are our digits, as they say. You need to get a hold of our digits and handle your business. Today, this morning and this hour, we're going to be talking about an historic week. We're going to be talking about student labor solidarity. We're going to be talking about some organizing that is going on all over this country as part of National Student Labor Week of Action. And to facilitate that conversation, I have with me this morning, joining us from Washington, D.C., Carl Liskum, the Student Labor Action Project Coordinator with Jobs for Justice. Carl, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Very good. Carl, talk to us about Student Labor Week of Action. What is that?
Well, Liz, the Student Labor Week of Action kicked off about 6 years ago, and it's basically a week where students show solidarity with workers, workers that are trying to organize unions, workers that are facing discrimination in the workplace, workers that don't receive fair wages, and students look for ways to help the workers out, either by doing educational events on their campuses or supporting struggles that unions are going through on campuses or things of that nature. Last year, there were about 250 actions and events for the Student Labor Week of Action, and we're expecting even more this year.
How many universities are involved in this, Carl?
This year, as of right now, there are about 200 universities involved around the country, from MIT and Brandeis to the University of California, Berkeley. All across the country.
And the purpose of this is to try to help people form unions and join unions?
Yeah, basically to help people form unions and join unions, labor unions are one of the best anti-poverty programs that the U.S. has to offer right now. They help workers fight for fair wages, for access to health care, and for other benefits in the workplace, and students see that, and so students are looking for ways to support labor unions.
When the students do these actions all across these 200-plus universities all across the country, is there a specific issue that they focus on, or are there issues that are kind of regional, like over in the Pacific Northwest, students might organize on the issue of child labor laws, and in the Midwest, they may organize around the minimum wage. Is there something like that going on?
Yeah, there is, basically. What students tend to do is they tend to focus on campaigns that are going on locally. This year, the theme of the Week of Action is the rights of workers to organize, but students are doing all types of, running all types of campaigns. In some places, they are focused on child labor. In other places, they're focused on sweatshop labor. In other places, they're focused on fighting for living wages for workers.
And that's the correct term, really. It's living wage as opposed to minimum wage.
Yes, a living wage, mm-hmm. a wage that enables workers to actually live their lives, pay rent, to eat, to have health care, and
now,
to support their families.
Carl, I've read a number of different articles about what's going on college campuses and what has actually been going on for a number of years. The type of student at college campuses is a little different than it was, say, 10, 15 years ago, from the perspective that it is more difficult for students to get into college for financial reasons. So that leaves the type of students at schools that really do have money or that do have access to the universities. Does that have an impact on the ability of your group and your efforts to get people interested in the issue of laborers or child labor laws or living wages?
Not really. I think that what students find is that no matter what their background is, when they finish school, they're going to enter the workforce, and they're going to have to deal with many of these issues themselves. So it's great to start from when you're in college to learn what your rights are in the workplace, and it really helps them gain an understanding of what workers are going through.
Well, part of that understanding, I think that many people in America have a difficult time understanding a lot of issues, from reparations to living wage, partly because they haven't been educated about the history of why this issue is so important and why you should see this issue in a certain way. What are you all doing to help with the educational component of your Week of Action?
Well, to help with the educational component of our Week of Action, we work with a lot of other groups here in Washington, D.C. on the Week of Action, such as the AFL-CIO and another group, United Students Against Sweatshops, and others. And the AFL-CIO has this great program called Voice at Work, which the goal is to teach students about organizing collective bargaining rights. They're organizing teach-ins on several campuses around the country. There's another group called American Rights at Work that does research around labor rights, and they've also made themselves available to students that are looking for more information about the week of about organizing rights for the Week of Action. And aside from that, we conduct workshops and trainings around the country for student activists.
And in terms of what you all are focusing on in Washington, D.C., what are the universities involved in that area, and what are some of the issues that they're looking at?
Well, here in Washington, D.C., I don't know, some people may have heard last week, Georgetown University had a really big victory. They were engaged in a living wage campaign, and they had a 10-day hunger strike,
mm-hmm.
I believe it was 10 days, where they built a makeshift tent on their campus, and about a dozen or more students basically didn't eat until the university agreed to pay their workers a living wage.
That's been an ongoing issue. We've talked about that issue in the past here on the show. Could you give us a little bit of background on that to bring people up to speed on it?
Well, basically, the Georgetown University students and the workers won their living wage campaign last week. The university agreed to raise the wages of workers to $13 an hour from $11 an hour this year, and to raise it to $14 an hour by 2007. And it was a long battle. It was really difficult for the students. There were many times where the students didn't believe that they'd be able to win, but they really just held on, and the university eventually complied with most of their demands.
And these were I guess one of the issues that was talked about in this particular campaign was the disparity between what a professor gets paid and what a janitor gets paid.
Yes, there's a huge disparity. Not that professors make an extraordinary amount of money either, but there is a huge disparity, and it's really sad because janitors contribute as much to college life as professors do and administrators.
And could you give us a little bit of background of why the week of March 34th and why this week, March 31st through April 4th? Is there some significance to that?
Yes, there is. March 31st is celebrated as Cesar Chavez Day. It's the day that he was born, and it's a day that's around the country has been celebrated for many years now, where different unions and workers hold events on Cesar Chavez Day to celebrate his life. And April 4th was the day that Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated in 1968 while supporting the Memphis sanitation workers' strike.
So this is a hugely historic week and significant.
Yes, it is, definitely.
So, Carl, when you look at the issues that need to be addressed in terms of ensuring that workers get have dignity, or that workers are able to work in an ability in a climate that values their presence, what are the issues that those of us in the Midwest or all over this country should really be looking at?
Well, I think one thing people should be looking at is whether or not wherever you work, if you're choosing to whatever job you choose, your career or whatever, you should make enough wages to be able to support a family and to live your life, to pay rent, to save money, to have three meals a day or whatever. Also, you should have access to health care and other benefits such as that. So I think that's really something that people universally around the country should look for when considering the rights of workers.
When you look at the current administration or the administration before this and the different things that those two administrations have done on the issues of workers or workers' rights or the issue of unions, is part of the education that you are engaging in this week to draw or to shed light on this particular administration and what they're not doing or what they are doing? Is part of your fight political as well?
Part of our fight is definitely political. I don't think that we're focused on this particular administration, whereas we're focused on the entire system and how the system itself really harms workers. The way that it's set up right now, most union organizing is overseen by the National Labor Relations Board, and the labor laws need to be more strict. They need to force employers to actually allow workers to bargain and to organize unions and force employers to provide benefits for workers.
One of the issues that we have taken on this show and on the wake-up call is the issue of Walmart and what Walmart is doing, the Walmartization of America or the world, actually. Have you all taken on this issue of Walmart? Is that one of the things that you all talk about?
Well, a lot of students are talking about Walmart right now because, as we all know, Walmart is one of the corporations that treats its workers the worst. And students are right now working with unions trying to explore ways that students can support efforts to organize workers at Walmart and efforts to make sure that justice is brought to the Walmart workers. So it's definitely something we're talking about.
When you look at the actions that are being engaged in by the in colleges all over the country, aside from the issue of was it George Washington University, what are some other success stories, or what are some other areas that people should be made aware of, or other universities and actions and interests of the students that people need to be made aware of that they might not be?
Well, one thing that's going on, a lot of the graduate student unions around the country are currently fighting for their rights to organize unions. Last July, the National Labor Relations Board ruled that graduate student employees, meaning teaching assistants, do not have the right to organize unions, that their primarily duty in universities is educational, and that them teaching does not, you know, provide them with such rights to organize unions. So I think that that's definitely one thing that people should be aware of. Graduate teaching assistants at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, Columbia University, Yale University, and many high-profile schools such as that face horrible working conditions. Many times graduate student teaching assistants make as little as $11,000 a year, whereas it's widely known that graduate students teach almost 50% of introductory college courses nationwide. And so that's definitely unfair, and a lot of our students are working to support their teaching assistants.
And so where is the battle?
In many places. Like I said, the University of Massachusetts Amherst, the graduate teaching assistants there are engaged in a battle. At Columbia University, there's an ongoing battle. At Yale University, at New York University, at Brown University, which was the place where the NLRB made the ruling, it was involving Brown University. And in many other places, at the University of California, they're going to be going through a contract battle very soon.
And in terms of the status of the battle, Carl, what is the status? They've lost that round with the NLRB. What's the next step for the graduate students in their efforts to unionize?
Well, the NLRB ruling was definitely a very big setback for the rights of graduate students to organize, but they're still fighting. The universities, it's really, when organizing unions, it's really up to the universities whether or not they choose to recognize labor unions on their campuses. So right now it's really about pressuring universities to actually recognize the rights of these workers to organize.
And in terms of students that are listening to the show all over the world, all over the country, what can they do to get involved in this week from March 31st to April 4th?
Well, they can do many things. Many students are doing really large things. There are a few rallies going on. And then there are smaller things happening. There are some student groups that are tabling around workers' rights, where they're giving out pamphlets and stickers and stuff like that. Some groups are holding teach-ins. Some groups are holding film screenings of movies such as At the River I Stand, which is about Martin Luther King and the Memphis sanitation workers. So there are a number of things students can do. I definitely encourage students to visit our website, www.jwj.org.
Give that again, Carl, please. A little slower.
www.jwj.org/students to sign up for the Student Labor Week of Action.
Carl Lipscomb, Student Labor Action Project Coordinator, talking to us about the Student Labor Action, talking about this National Student Labor Week of Action. Thank you so much for joining us on the Wake Up Call.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown, Wake Up Call. I'll be back after this. Stay with us at 454-0400 is the phone number, 454-6609 is the fact. Get to me. We have much to talk about.
You're listening to the best of the Wake Up Call. We'll have more of that on the way following this hour's traffic and these commercials. Morning, St. Louis. 28 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Chaser Plus. Northbound 270 between 44 and Marshall. Look for no delays. Eastbound 70 between 370 and the Blanchett Bridge looks good. Westbound 270 from 255 all the way to Chain Rocks. Expect delays there as well. Westbound 5570 on the Poplar Street Bridge. No problems to report there. Eastbound 44 from 141 through 270 is on the move. East westbound 40 between McCausland and Hanley. Look for no delays. There are some ongoing construction projects. Just use caution and slow down through those work zones. Otherwise, all your approaches in the Poplar Street Bridge, you can expect some delays there as well. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Chaser Plus. Do Chaser Plus hangover pills really work? Yes, Chaser absorbs toxins to help stop hangovers. Take it while you drink so you wake up feeling great. Buy Chaser at Walgreens, CVS, and GNC stores. Please drink responsibly, and remember, don't drink and drive. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. Partly sunny with a high in the lower 50s today. Partly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s this evening. Partly sunny early in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy throughout the day. High in the 50s and Friday, cloudy. Chance of showers in the morning and chance of showers in the afternoon. Highs in the 50s as well. Currently, we've got 33 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 33 as well. Stay tuned for more of the best of the wake-up call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
People can't stop talking about the remarkable results they get with their Bowflex Tread Climber machine.
I lost over 20 pounds working out on the Tread Climber.
I've lost almost 10 inches off my waist.
The Bowflex Tread Climber machine combines the stepping motion of a stepper with the walking motion of a treadmill. It's the low-impact way to burn up to twice the calories of a treadmill at the same speed.
It's really strengthened my core, my abs, and there's no impact on my joints.
Call 1-800-888-7635 for a free information. DVD.
I'm in better shape now than I was 20 years ago.
Get a Bowflex Tread Climber machine for no money down and payments as low as $24 a month.
I'm 40 and I am in the best shape of my adult life.
Be lean. Be fit. Be Bowflex. For a free DVD, call 1-800-888-7635. 1-800-888-7635. On approved Bowflex credit card purchases, monthly payment is 1.5% of the purchase plus any late fee. The number of months you pay and total amount of minimum monthly payments depends on additional purchase and account balances. Call for details.
Hey, St. Louis, I'm Sir Sax, and I want to invite you to a brand new program. It's called the Gospel Skate Party, the show where I bring you the best in Christian rap, righteous R&G, a taste of that holy hip-hop, etc., etc. It starts January the 5th at 10 p.m. Don't forget, the Gospel Skate Party, January the 5th, 10 to 11 p.m., right here on WGNU. Get your skates on and skate with Sir Sax.
Pick up the phone.
Yellow?
Where are you?
I'm kind of run down, so I stayed home.
Aren't you my immune system?
Right, I'm kind of beat.
Look, I'm counting on you. The big New York meeting's
coming. You know, holding the phone's making me tired.
What?
So
No.
I'm
going to
go lay down now.
I need you.
Can't afford the downtime? At the first sign of a cold, take new ColdFX capsules to strengthen your immune system and keep you going strong. ColdFX, the number one cold remedy in Canada, is now available here. Find ColdFX in the cough and cold section of your local pharmacy.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care. And at Connect Care, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at Connect Care, but we're still connected to you. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
And now we return you more of the best of the Wake-Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
You lie about your name. you have no skills and the profession you proclaim to be a part of. You have no training. Your major source of revenue comes from a website that is an escort service where you have posted nude photographs of yourself. And you also engage in escort servicing. This individual has access to the President of the United States, has received secret documents, and has a daily press pass to sit in press conferences and ask George W. Bush questions. Something's wrong there, you think? You think? So what is the party of morality? What is the party who was elected based upon the issues of morals? What is their response to a part-time prostitute having access to George W. Bush and being shown favor by George W. Bush? What is their response to that? We need to talk about that and much, much more. And to facilitate that conversation, Danny Schechter of Global Vision Media is joining us this morning from New York. Danny, good morning.
Good morning. Do you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. How are you?
Good. I'm fine. I'm here in New York City where it's beginning to warm up just a tad. It was like the Arctic yesterday.
Yes, it was. What's up with your weather?
Well, it's a different season every day. Sometimes we have several seasons in one day.
But there's no global warming.
No.
There's no global warming. So, Danny, talk to us. Jeff Gannon.
Well, you know, this is one of the many stories that sort of strains belief and credibility, but yet seems to be true. As the Bush administration tries to control its media spin using all sorts of subtle and not-so-subtle techniques, including giving grants to journalists to spin their stories in their own news without disclosing it. We've seen that in the Armstrong-Williams case. And now there's this case of a gentleman who's at the White House as on a day pass for an outfit called Talon News. He's a journalist, supposedly, and he's asking questions at the press conference that are like this, which say, you know, basically, how do you put up with these Democrats who say such and such and such and such? In other words, blatantly partisan speeches in the form of questions. And we now learn that this news outfit that he worked for is subsidized by the Republican Party, and that he himself is a sort of a phony journalist there to actually was recognized by the press secretary in all of this as somebody who's really there to use the forum of the press conference for political partisan propaganda, not for journalism. So that's point one. Point two, as people investigate this guy, they find out that in addition to his public role, he also ran websites, gay escort websites, militarystuds.com. And so here's a guy who is sort of leading two lives with two names, Gluckert and Gannon, who is actually not what he, you know, claims to be. And, you know, generally speaking, here's an example of somebody who, the kind of person that the Bush administration sort of crusaded against, you know, and it crusaded against gay marriage and the like, right in the White House, raising these, you know, kind of phony questions, and nobody's saying anything about it. Not the White House, not the press White House Press Association, Correspondents Association. This comes out, you know, not because the journalists who were there blew the whistle on this guy, but because of outside expose. So here another kind of scandal.
And let's be specific.
To the White House. It's almost bizarre.
Well,
it's, you know, Jon Stewart has been making fun of it on Comedy Channel. Others have been writing about it all over the place.
And
this guy now, after being quiet for a while, has now come back claiming that he's being discriminated against, being targeted, has created his own blog, and is still going strong. So, you know, this is sort of the state of the media in the era of the Bush administration.
But, Danny, and let's talk about the way that this came to light. It didn't come through CNN. It didn't come from CBS. It didn't come from that liberal Dan Rather. It came from a blogger.
This is the whole thing.
And one of the things that I wanted to talk about is the fact that I've seen now that there is an effort afoot for the FCC now to begin trying to monitor bloggers and try to start fining bloggers and to go after bloggers. And do you think that that's a direct result of this type of a case?
I don't think so. But what seems to be clear is that the mainstream media sort of advocated its responsibilities as a critical force or critical voice in American life. As a consequence, the Internet has become the place for more diverse news coverage on the one hand and more opinion, a greater range of opinion, and more digging, more investigative media. And in this case, we have the proliferation of the bloggers, people who write columns on the Internet. I'm one of them. At mediachannel.org. I write every single day about what's not in the news, what's in the news, and try to offer a perspective that I think is missing in most of the media. Now, many other bloggers are doing this also, and many of them are sort of digging, you know, investigating, doing investigative journalism online, and often blowing the whistle on stories that others aren't.
And what is so fascinating about this, well, there's many, many, many components to this, but one of the more fascinating components to this, and one that hasn't really been talked about a whole lot, is the idea of how does this man get a press pass, period. There are plenty of journalists, actual journalists, real journalists,
yeah,
who are particularly of African descent, that who have never been able to get a press pass.
Well, obviously, the White House controls that with the White House Press Correspondents Association, and it's very, shall we say, very flexible. But, you know, Maureen Dowd of the New York Times, who's an op-ed page columnist, when she wrote about this, she revealed that she herself, in her effort to get a press pass, was held up for a long time because she's a known critic of the administration. On the other hand, the day passes, when journalists come in for a day or so, that tends to be more liberal in a way, as opposed to getting accreditation there. And in his case, apparently, he just kept getting these day passes and kept getting, re-upped, so to speak. And I think the reason is obvious that, you know, he was basically carrying the water for the Bush administration.
So how then does the Bush administration distance itself from this man? Because you have to have connections to get a daily day pass. You have to have connections for the president to even ask you a question.
You know, his so-called news service was funded by the GOP. How about that? So, of course, you know, all in life, everybody knows that there's no how and there's no who. And if you are in the know-who world and you're part of the Republican Party, it's not surprising that you can get access to the White House, because that's, you know, the center of the Republican Party right now. Or I like to call it the Republican Guard, you know, borrowing a phrase from Saddam Hussein. America's Republican Guard is quite happy to have people like this, you know, in their midst. Now, my complaint is with the mainstream media people who are at the White House while all this is going on, and nobody raised an objection, as far as I can tell. Nobody challenged this.
The first time that I saw this on television was watching, of course, the Daily Show with Jon Stewart when he played the clip.
I mean, you know, and this is why, for example, I was just on I'm going to be on C-SPAN on 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday, and I was just down in Washington yesterday being interviewed by a group of kids, high school kids, who were visiting our nation's capital, and there's a thing called the Close Up Foundation. They do a program that airs on C-SPAN. And, you know, these kids were basically saying, I said, how many of you rely on the Comedy Channel for your news? Almost everybody in the room's hand went up. So what does that say about our news system if young people are abandoning it?
Well, it's worse than that.
Looking at comedy channels for more information about what's going on.
Well, no, it's more than that, Danny, because the comedy, because the Daily Show gets it right. That's the scary part, that a comedy show.
When you ask Jon Stewart about it, he says, look, I'm not a journalist. I just play one on TV. I'm a comedian, you know.
But he still gets the news right, and the people that are supposed to be reporting it don't.
Well, this is the problem, isn't it? That's why I made this movie WMD, to try to raise questions about, you know, about the way the war was presented. By the way, Liz, you know, our film is now out on DVD.
Excellent.
WMD. So it's now, you know, going out around the world. We just got invited to a film festival in South Africa.
Very
good. So it'll be shown there. It's been shown in the Arab world, in Japan, and
Australia,
and Spain.
When are you going to be in? When are you going to be in South Africa?
When am I going to be there? I don't know yet, but maybe I'll come down for this film festival. It's great.
Very good.
And when are you going?
We're going July 7th through the 20th.
Well, wonderful. I could probably help you with some contacts.
Very good.
Great country to visit.
Absolutely.
Know? And you learn a lot. I hope that people, are just signing up left and right to go with you, because I think they'll learn a lot. Nothing like being there and seeing it yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have some folks on the line that want to ask you some questions, Danny.
Sure enough.
Dave, you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yes. Is WMD? I heard them talking about his movie again. What exactly does that stand for? It's not weapons of mass destruction, is it?
No, weapons of mass deception.
Okay, right.
That's what I'm characterizing in the media. I'm saying that there was, you know, media weapons of mass deception that were targeting us, basically misinforming us about the war in Iraq.
Yeah, but
and that's why I called it that, because I think there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, but there sure enough were weapons of mass deception, because now the New York Times, the Washington Post say, oops, we made a mistake in the coverage, so do the network news presidents. They're admitting their coverage was flawed, but meanwhile, many Americans bought into it. You know, if you go to our website, WMDthefilm.com, you'll be able to see a clip from the film, and coming on March 15th, we're going to be having a showcase on the internet with a new technology called High Video, and we're going to be showing, you know, a kind of film about the film called The Making and Mission of WMD, with some clips from the film and some more information about it. So we're trying to get word of this out as widely as we can. It was shown in a theater in St. Louis. It was shown on public access. We're trying to promote it, and, you know, and now it's out in DVD, so
okay,
people can get it.
Excuse me. Can I ask you a question? So
yeah.
The thing about it that really, I've been listening to this story bits and pieces about the Gannon guy, but the thing that got me the other day when I said, they said this guy had been there for 2 years. Are you aware of that, 2 years?
I know.
And how do they have a number? Has anybody did a thing where they just cataloged all the questions that he asked them, or they did that one?
That's a very good question.
Yeah, how did that come? Tell me exactly what. Be a little more specific about how I came out, and I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks for your call and question.
Specific about what? I'm sorry.
Specifically about how he was uncovered, how Jeff Gannon was uncovered.
Well,
and also, this, wait a minute.
People were analyzing, were watching, you know, these kinds of this litany of, you know, softball questions that he was raising, and began to say, this doesn't sound right. This doesn't sound like a real reporter. I don't know the exact, I don't really recall the exact incident, but I know that Tim Carr, who was blogging for MediaChannel.org, was one of the first to kind of spotlight his practices, and this whole story blew up into a much bigger story because it's connected with the whole Bush administration, public relations, media spin operation.
And in the second part of the question that Dave asked was, has anybody gone back over the past 2 years to catalog and to count the questions that he was allowed to ask? Because there's also
There have been people who have done that. My suggestion would be to go to Google on the internet, you know, in the search engine there, and put his name in and follow that up and research it. I can't give you the citation off the top of my head right now.
And we're going to take a break.
I haven't had my coffee yet.
All right. We're going to take a break, folks. I'm talking to Danny Schechter of Global Vision Media, joining us from New York. We see your questions, and we see you waiting on the line to ask some questions. We're going to take a break, but we'll be back. And, of course, we're talking about Jeff Gannon. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Best of the Wake-Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap, weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
What America needs is affordable health insurance. Finding affordable health insurance for you and your family, it's on everyone's mind right now. If you're self-employed, it's on your mind too. One of the things we face as entrepreneurial Americans is finding affordable health insurance. Well, I've found a company you can call right now and get affordable health insurance. Midwest National Life Insurance Company of Tennessee. Write this number down. 877-652-7793. That's 877-652-7793. Midwest specializes in helping entrepreneurs of all kinds. Those of us who run small businesses or don't get health insurance where we work, to protect our families with affordable health insurance. Call 877-652-7793. Not available in all states. Association membership is required in most states. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Exclusions and limitations apply.
It's time for this hour's WGNU Global News Update. I'm Peyton Colston. Dateline Galveston, Texas. A ruptured pipeline is leaking oil into the Gulf of Mexico. Coast Guard officials say over 21,000 gallons of medium crude has leaked into the Gulf, about 30 miles off the coast of Galveston since Sunday. Chief Warrant Officer Adam Wine says officials with Plains Pipeline have taken steps to reduce the flow until the rupture can be repaired.
They did shut down the land side of the pipeline and put a positive reduction or a suction on it so that they were pulling the oil away from where the leak was at. But, of course, there's still that section of pipeline that goes all the way out to the platforms areas.
The cause of the leak remains under investigation. Meanwhile, Dateline Lagos, Nigeria, nearly 270 people were burned to death after vandals punctured a fuel pipeline. Scores of people converged on the pipeline break to collect the fuel. It then ignited and blew up. The Nigerian Red Cross says another 60 people were injured. Hundreds of bodies, some burned beyond recognition, were scattered by the explosion. Officials say an armed gang punctured the pipeline to siphon off fuel into tank trucks. The fire burned for 6 hours before it was extinguished. I'm Peyton Colston, and that's your WGNU Global News Update.
Purple, 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 purple.
Another happy business owner who just discovered his free business listing at
purplepages.com. Purple, purple, purple.
If you're a business, your name, address, and phone number is up there, too.
Purple!
Log on today, get a free premium placement, even upgrade your listing to stand out from your competitors.
Purple Pages, Purple Pages, everything for Purple Pages, Purple Pages, Purple Pages,
purple, purple, purple.
Stop that! PurplePages.com. Thank Purple.
Purple.
Tune in every Thursday at noon till 1 p.m. on WGNU 920 on the AM dial. You can talk to Dr. Walker and her guests weekly to discuss health and medical issues. Nurse Wanda always has information that you won't want to miss. Every show is different, and talking to Dr. Walker is always fun. Call 314-454-0400. You can also listen to Dr. Walker's Medical Hour on the Internet. Log on to WGNU.net. Click on Listen Live.
Big Brother is watching, and we're watching Big Brother. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Bryant.
More of the best of the wake-up call right now on AM 920 WGNU.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the wake-up call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. We are talking to Danny Schechter of a Global Vision Media, joining us from New York, and we're talking about the Jeff Gannon story. And we have some callers on the line. I want to ask you some questions, Danny, so we're going to go directly to some of the callers. Ben, do you have a question for Danny Schechter?
Yes, about Jeff. Gannon, Liz, I wonder, I've seen Jeff Gannon interview, or whatever his real name is, on two cable news channels, and neither interviewer, which was one of them was Wolf Blitzer, I remember. I can't remember who the other guy was on MSNBC, never asked him about his gay escort service website. Can he please tell me, did he see that, or am I just imagining it? And another thing is...
Well, you know, to be honest, I didn't see that particular show,
But I have to tell you that the coverage of this has not been stellar. You know, in other words, this whole controversy has been covered a lot on the internet, in the blogs, and on media sites, but it has not been given a lot of coverage in the mainstream media. Maybe because, you know, they feel guilty about not having exposed the story. Maybe because they're nervous about the gay content and the idea, particularly that, you know, his site is kind of military oriented. You know.
You're right, and it
you
is,
know,
and they're going through a don't ask, don't tell phase now to keep people in the military. So it's always aimed at that type of thing. Now, I can't understand why they softball him on their interviews, and I also want to ask you one other question. I hang up and listen. I've noticed that when neocons are interviewed, they seem to give long, convoluted answers to try and heat up time. Have you noticed that too? When they're getting interviewed on a tough situation.
Thanks for your call and question, Ben. Did you get that question? Danny, did you get the question?
Yeah, I got the question barely, but I mean, I'm just saying, we have a problem in this country with our media. Is our media giving us, you know, the details on a lot of stories? Here's a story right out of the heart of the White House. And you would think that this would be something people would jump on. Believe me, if Bill Clinton was in any way associated with somebody like this, I'm sure it would have been page one news for weeks.
And I'm looking at a story that just came out about from the Secret Service, Representative John Conyers and Representative Lewis Slaughter on Monday wanted to investigate the approval of discredited White House correspondent Jeff Gannon, and the Secret Service has said that Gannon was approved appropriately. Please be advised, they said, that our office protections operations has looked into this matter and determined that there was no deviation from Secret Service standards and procedures, as your letters suggest.
Right.
How does a person with an alias get a day pass?
Well,
and what kind of procedures do you have that would allow a person with an alias to get a day pass?
Well, you know, journalists sometimes write under pseudonyms and what have you. And, of course, I think the accreditation procedure is handled by the White House press office, not by the Secret Service per se. The issue that the congressmen were trying to raise, you know, is there a security threat here in some way? And, you know, I don't know. I think that's a little far-fetched. But they were basically trying to say, well, the Secret Service should be wary of this. I think the Secret Service basically lets the press association handle, you know, this whole issue.
Well, the person, John Aravis, the America blog person who dug up the photos of Gannon selling his own escort service, says that the fact is that Gannon's day pass amounted to basically a hard pass, a pass that gives a reporter to daily access. So how is it that the Secret Service allowed a person to have daily access to the White House on a single pass when reporters...
The criteria. In other words, I don't know that the Secret Service, if somebody has a pass, I've been in the White House. You have the right pass, they let you in. You don't have the right pass, they don't let you in. They don't necessarily give the passes. They just, you know, for example, you go to visit somebody there, and they say, okay, he's my guest, let him in, they'll let you in. I'm not sure that the Secret Service itself is responsible for this. Maybe they should have been responsible for it.
What?
Maybe they fell down on the job. I don't know on that angle. What I'm more concerned with is here is a White House Press Correspondents Association. They always have a dinner every year. The president comes, and it's big, a lot of yucks and jokes about politics. They set the rules and administer the White House press room. And here you have a situation where, you know, virtual imposter is allowed daily access, and I'm sure it's because the Bush administration wanted him there.
And
the people running the White House press room want to have so-called friendlies there.
But they also must have known.
The press is the enemy in many instances.
So which
even though, for the most part, the press is totally deferential to them, you know, not really challenging them.
So I
don't know where exactly the Secret Service comes in, if this is a real issue or just a political way of raising this with the government. But, you know, I think the larger problem is still there. This guy is a fraud. He was allowed access regularly. He dominated some of the, not dominated, was a good presence at a lot of press conferences, tried to spin the news in the direction of the administration. The administration knew who he was, and they let him, you know, be there. That's the issue.
Well, which is a bigger problem? And this is just a rhetorical question. Which is a bigger problem? The fact that they let him in and he had access and there aren't any procedures to check that, or they let him in knowing full well who he was to ask the question?
I see.
Let me get to this car phone here. Car phone, you have a question for Danny Schechter.
Yes. My question is regarding this upcoming CAFTA agreement, the Central American Free Trade Act, and its relation to border security and immigration. Hello.
Yeah, I hear you. I don't know too much about that. I have to tell you honestly, I can't really comment on it. I'm not very informed on it.
You've been listening to the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920. More to come following the news, weather, and traffic.
For power, nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over
the world. Issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Jerry Albear.
I'm a Ford, not a Lincoln.
He may have never planned to be president or even vice president. Gerald Ford, the only White House occupant who wasn't elected to either office, has died. President Bush spoke to the nation about it this morning.
All of us are saddened by the news that former President Gerald R. Ford passed away last night. I spoke with Betty Ford. On behalf of all Americans, Laura and I extend to Mrs. Ford and all President Ford's family our prayers and our condolences.
More from ABC's Ann Compton at the White House.
Gerald Ford put an end to what he called the long national nightmare of Watergate. Vice President Cheney recently recalled Ford's skill in office. Cheney was Ford's chief of staff.
He was naturally modest. He was comfortable with responsibility and a master of details.
President Bush is saluting the late president's integrity. Ann Compton, ABC News, the White House.
Lou Cannon covered the Ford White House for the Washington Post.
It was an extremely normal, decent, well-liked person. He wasn't an extraordinary president, but he was what the nation needed at the time.
The image of the nation's 38th president may have been that of a bumbling stumbler, thanks in part to Saturday Night Live parodies and some highly publicized mishaps. Mr. Ford, in fact, was an athlete who played on two national championship teams at the University of Michigan and had offers to go pro. Gerald Ford was 93. Another winter storm has blown into the West just in time to cause some big trouble for New Year's Day weekend. It's brought some fresh powder to the Tahoe area ski resorts, but it's also whipped up enough wind to temporarily close them down. A final appearance at the Apollo Theater for James Brown, the godfather of soul, got his start at the Harlem concert venue. His body will lie in repose there tomorrow. Brown died on Christmas morning. This is ABC News.
I'm a mother of three. I'm a three-time Wimbledon champion. And I'm just beginning a whole new career. And whether you're an active mom or a pro athlete, we all face the same threat to our lives and health, osteoporosis. That's why I take CitraCal calcium supplements, because bone loss and osteoporosis are not going to slow me down. I'm Chris Everett. I'm 51, and I am strong.
Tell us about a strong woman you know at StandStrong.com. CitraCal calcium. Stand strong.
Okay, honey, this one's for you.
It's a new Tundra!
It only happens once a year. Toyota-thon is on, and your Toyota dealer is the perfect place to unwrap a few of your favorite things.
It's a Corolla!
It's Toyota-thon, the time to save on many of the Toyotas you've been wishing for.
4Runner, with an available 260 horsepower VVT-i V8.
This is your opportunity for year-end savings. Check out Camry, Motor Trend 2007 Car of the Year, the Toyota-thon sales event. Hurry, time is running out.
What's in a name? Plenty when it comes to the late Gerald Ford. It wasn't the one on the birth certificate of the nation's 38th president. Here's ABC's Deirdre Bryant.
He was born Leslie Lynch King Jr. on July 14, 1913. Less than a year later, his parents divorced. A few years later, his mother married Gerald R. Ford, who adopted the future president and renamed him. Ford writes in his autobiography that he was a high school senior working in a Greek restaurant when a man walked in and said, "I'm your father." Ford wrote that he cried that night after being left with the image of a carefree, well-to-do man who didn't give a damn about the hopes and dreams of his firstborn son. Deirdre Bryant, ABC News.
All right, here's a question for you. Can you improve on something as good as peanut butter? Scientists in Georgia think you can. They've been given the go-ahead to build a genetically engineered peanut, which they say would be just as tasty, more nutritious, and less likely to cause that dreaded peanut allergy. I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
This WGNU News report is brought to you by the Illinois Lottery. I'm Peyton Colston. Police are still seeking the shooter of a Metrolink security guard. Authorities say 59-year-old Marvin Kamek was working at the Delmar Metrolink station late Monday night when he tried to break up a fight between two groups. Someone fired several shots and struck Kamek in the back and thigh. Police are questioning several people, but no one's been charged yet. In Jefferson City, the Missouri Department of Elementary and Secondary Education is grading the state's school districts. Stan Johnson, the Assistant Commissioner for the Division of School Improvement, says the report's required by law and gives a snapshot of individual districts. The report found that overall, K-12 enrollment increased by 1%, and the number of teachers in the classroom increased by 2%. The number of high school dropouts increased from 3.7% to 4%, and the graduation rate dropped slightly to 85.7%. Finally, at this hour, if your house is a wreck from falling tree needles, local recycling coordinators have a solution. Barb Holt with the St. Clair County Health Department says recycling centers will be happy to take your real Christmas tree once you take down your decorations. Trees are either turned to mulch or used for fish habitat in lakes. Check with your local municipality for times and locations of recycling centers. And that's this hour's WGNU News Update. It's been brought to you by the Illinois Lottery. Play Illinois Lottery's instant tickets. Millions of dollars in available cash prizes. Illinois Lottery. Have a ball. Play responsibly. I'm Peyton Colston reporting WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. Sours Traffic is sponsored by RAD and the American Federation of Musicians. Westbound 70 at New Florestel. Look for an accident reported northbound 270 between 44 and Marshall. Everything's running smoothly. Eastbound 70 from 370 through the Blanchett Bridge looks good. Westbound 270 from 255 to Chain of Rocks is on the move. Westbound 5570 on the Poplar Street Bridge. No problems to report there. Eastbound 44 at 141 all the way through 270 looks good. Westbound 40 between McCausland and Hanley looks good. And there are a couple of ongoing projects at this hour, so just use caution to slow down through those work zones. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by RAD and the American Federation of Musicians. Season's greetings from RAD and the American Federation of Musicians. Remember, music lives, and so should you. So buckle up and use a designated driver. Learn more at RAD, that's RADD.com. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. For today, partly sunny. High in the lower 50s. This evening, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s. Thursday, partly sunny in the morning. Mostly cloudy throughout the day. High in the mid-50s. And Friday, chance of showers in the morning and chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon with a high around 50. Currently, we have 36 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 36 as well. Liz Brown is out today. She is on vacation. So we will bring you more of the best of the wake-up call that comes up next. Take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother. Revolution in the air, tell me, brother.
Mr. King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing your wound that's below that door.
For power, nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember that.
Say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below that the low knee.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air, brothers.
The hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemy of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Well, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax, and my toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. You can always email me at Liz Brown, LIZZBROWN, at SBCGlobal.net. That's Liz Brown at SBCGlobal.net. Any kind of, every kind of, all kinds of ways. Get to me today. We have much to talk about. Recently, the Supreme Court decided that this country will no longer kill children. I want to give you a little bit of a background of where we are with the death penalty, because we're going to talk about what led up to that decision, what that decision means, and what battles are left to fight on the death penalty issue. 1972, Furman versus Georgia, the Supreme Court ruled that the death penalty does not violate the Constitution. However, the manner in which the death penalty is applied does. The court noted that capital punishment is most likely to be imposed in a discriminatory way, where people of African descent are far more likely to be executed than white people. And in 1972, Furman versus Georgia essentially ends the practice of its execution. A mere 4 years later, in the decision Gregg versus Georgia, Georgia death penalty statute is held constitutional. This is a ruling that sets the stage for the resumption of executions. In 1987, McKenzie versus Kemp, the justices ruled that the state death penalty laws are constitutional even when
The statistics show that they have been applied in racially biased ways. In 1988, Thompson versus Oklahoma, the court decides that people younger than 16 when they committed a crime may not be executed. However, a mere year later, Stanford versus Kentucky, the justices uphold the constitutionality of executing juveniles older than 15. In 2002, Atkins versus Virginia justices ruled that executing mentally retarded criminals violates the Constitution's ban on cruel and unusual punishments. Justice John Paul Stevens cites a national consensus against executing a killer who may lack the intelligence to fully understand his crime. And then in 2005, Roper versus Simmons, the court rules that the Constitution forbids the execution of killers who were under the age of 18 when they committed their crimes, ending a practice used in 19 states. So here we are today, from 1972 to 2005. What is interesting is that juveniles have been executed. States have been executing juveniles. Since January 1st, 1973, Texas has executed 13 juveniles, Virginia 3, Oklahoma 2, South Carolina 1, Louisiana 1, Missouri 1, Georgia 1. The total is 22. And Missouri executed one juvenile before banning of executions of those under 18. We have to talk about this. And what is interesting is that the case that took us to the Supreme Court, I believe it's from here in Missouri, we have Margaret Phillips, a spokesperson from the St. Louis region of Missourians to abolish the death penalty, joining us here on the Wake Up Call. Margaret, good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you. And we also have Sue Vaughn, the director of Amnesty International's program to abolish the death penalty, joining us from Washington, D.C. Sue, welcome to the Wake Up Call.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Margaret, let's start with you. Talk to us about the case that took us to the Supreme Court.
This was, like so many of the murders, all murders, horrible. He and an accomplice went to the house of a woman who he recognized or thought would recognize him. Said he bound her. They bound her and threw her over the bridge into the water, bound. Reportedly, he said that, well, they can't do anything to us. We're juveniles. We all know that juveniles think they're immortal.
Yes, they do.
He has been on death row for many years now. He has the reputation now of being a model inmate of trying, out of his remorse, to work with kids to the extent that he can from being on death row. It's a sort of don't do what I did kind of a lesson. That's a summary of the actual facts.
Okay, and in terms of the state of Missouri and the efforts within the state of Missouri to work on this case, to work against the death penalty, is Missouri different than other states?
In execution of juveniles, well, we, like many others, execute under 18. If you mean the death penalty as a whole, we do execute proportionally more than most states. We are, the last time I looked, number 4 in the nation in the number of people executed, which is a pretty high rate.
And Sue, I'd like to go to you. Could you talk to us about the details of the decision made by in Roper versus Simmons? How did the court come to decide that this country would no longer execute juveniles?
Yes, Liz. There were a couple of reasons, and it's very interesting. I just wanted to mention that the United States, for all practical purposes, was the only country that was actively executing juvenile offenders in the entire international community. Since 2000, only 4 other countries have executed juveniles, China, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Iran and Pakistan. And in all of these cases, when they go before the UN Human Rights Commission, they sort of deny the practice, or they say, you know, this is something that's through the cracks, or in fact, we have a de facto moratorium. So till Roper, the United States was the only country that sort of unabashedly kept the juvenile death penalty within its penal statute. So that's an interesting fact, I think, that most listeners might not be aware of. In the ruling, there were a couple of different factors that the justices looked at. One was the main force that also took place in the case of Atkins versus Virginia, which determined that the death penalty for those with mental retardation should be banned, which took place in 2002 when the ruling came from the Supreme Court. And essentially, in interpreting how the Eighth Amendment provision of cruel and unusual punishment should be applied, the justices determined that in any maturing society, in any contemporary society that is growing, they look to evolving standards of decency in terms of how the provision of cruel and unusual punishment is to be interpreted. And that, in fact, in the United States, that executing juvenile offenders constituted cruel and unusual punishment because children are different under the law. We treat them differently in so many different categories, whether it's buying alcohol, buying tobacco, you know, entering into contracts, serving on a jury. Children are different. And the more and more evidence that we find in terms of cognitive development and brain development, kids are different. And kids are less morally culpable, even in the case of a heinous crime, as Margaret described. They are different from the way adults should be treated. So that was one of the main things they looked at. They also looked at state legislatures, and public opinion on this issue. And while there still exists in the United States some support for, a majority of the population does support the death penalty per se, we found in case after case that there was public opposition to the juvenile death penalty. They also looked at the states that had changed. We had four states since 1989, since Stanford versus Kentucky, which determined that 16 and 17-year-olds could be put to death, that states had changed their laws. We had laws changed in Montana, Indiana, and South Dakota and Wyoming. And moreover, what the court also looked at was not just the number of states, but the direction in which the states were changing. So you had states changing to increase the age, And in no case was there a decrease in the age. And as I mentioned before, international norms, international conventions, to which the U.S. is bound, also played a role.
Now, when we look at the evidence about how juveniles are different, when we the studies that are done, Sue, it just seems so obvious. Of course, children are different than adults. Why do you suppose it's been so difficult for this country to not embrace that and to not be appalled at the idea that we would be a nation that that's easily kills children?
That's an interesting question for which I actually don't have a good answer. The only speculation that I can have on whether the death penalty, whether it be applied to juveniles or adults. During the 80s, I believe, the late 70s and 80s, there was a lot of very sensationalistic media coverage of certain crimes, not just death penalty eligible crimes, but certain crimes by juvenile offenders in general. And I think instead of trying to sort of analyze the socioeconomic reasons or put it in context, was highly sensationalized. And the death penalty, I think, was seen by many politicians as sort of a quick fix, in terms of their political campaigns, in terms of, saying this is the way, we have these teen killers and, they need to be, put to death kind of thing, which, really was highly, highly sensationalized. And I think that caught on with public opinion. So I think it's taken, you know, some time to change that public opinion and to, you know, make people realize that, in fact, you know, even in the United States, while the death penalty, while the juvenile death penalty has existed, very few states, even with the states that have death penalty statutes, very few states actually use this, you know, with regards to juveniles. In fact, I believe out of the 19 states that have death penalty statutes, there were juveniles on death rows in only 12 of them. In those 12, too, you know, when you come up with appeals and stuff, I think there's a realization that these children who have the possibility of being rehabilitated, you know, no matter what the crime they committed when they were, you know, underage, you know, don't deserve to die. I mean, the death penalty is the ultimate, most irrevocable punishment. And by no means is Amnesty International and other organizations that worked on this issue saying that juvenile offenders shouldn't be held accountable. But the death penalty is, in fact, different. And I think that in more recent times, it's just a few states, Texas being one of the leading ones, who've actually executed juvenile offenders in large numbers. So even in the United States, this practice is dwindling because there isn't that great public support for it, despite the sort of sensationalistic sort of media efforts to say that, you know, these kids, you know, deserve to die. And, you know, I also think that, you know, the point that you made about children being different is in many ways an obvious point. Anyone who has teenagers at home can attest to the fact that someone, you know, acts very differently at 16 than they do at, you know, 26.
And even if you don't have children, everyone appreciates the fact that children should not, a 12-year-old, a 15-year-old, shouldn't be allowed to drink. There are plenty of rules out here that we have for children, and we understand why we have these rules for children.
Exactly. And it's a universal prohibition. This is not something that's, you know, particular to the United States. There's almost an international consensus that children are different and deserve, you know, a high level of protection, you know, within the criminal justice system, within society. And I just think that this, you know, the United States has finally sort of realized this as a nation and is in step now with the international community.
And let me get to Margaret here because she has to leave in a few minutes.
Sure.
Margaret, how when the court talks about measuring public opinion, how does Missouri stand in terms of public opinion and the death penalty?
Oh, Missouri, about juveniles. Missouri, like the rest of the country, opinion polls show are against execution of juveniles. That public opinion polls. One just came out recently, I think, nationwide. Can't remember details. But the It is interesting that people say most juveniles don't kill. Why do you want to prevent us from killing those who do? You can make a comparable argument that most people who are jobless or poor don't kill people, don't burgle, don't rob. But statistics show that there's a higher proportion. Those factors push people, but most don't. You could push that analogy by saying, okay, most teenagers don't drink too much, so let's let them all. Most teenagers don't drive carelessly, so why don't we let everybody do it? It's not the most that are the issue here. It's the fact that underlying their age, their status, there is less ability to avoid these problem, these horrible outcomes.
Now, I've noticed as I looked at the patterns of when the death penalty has been eliminated, we've eliminated the death penalty for the mentally challenged. We have eliminated the death penalty for our young people. Yet and still, one pervasive fact continues and has been with us from the beginning and continues with us, and that's racial disparity. Do either one of you see an end to the death penalty because of the racial disparities that persist in the execution of the death penalty?
Well, I will let Margaret sort of talk about Missouri, and I can talk more, you know, at the national level if month.
Very good.
Yeah. For race, most recent statistics show, since the criminal justice system is very careful now to try not to let gross racial inequities show in statistics, what's left really that is so painful is that it's that a person who kills a white person is more likely to get the death penalty. This shows a dreadful underlying assumption and pattern. Black lives are worth less. Do we really want to say that?
And we're going to let that, we're going to end with that, Margaret. Thank you so much. Margaret Phillips, spokesperson from St. Louis, Missourians to Abolish the Death Penalty. Thank
Could
you.
I add one little tidbit?
Certainly.
We have a web page that people might find good links to, including public opinion polls. If you look for it under www.moabolition.org.
Very good. Margaret Phillips, spokesperson from Missourians to Abolish the Death Penalty. Thank you for joining us. And Sue, stay with us. We're going to be back to continue this conversation.
Thank you.
This is Liz Brown, the Wake Up Call. We're talking about the death penalty, and we're talking about the execution of juveniles. We'll be back. Stay with us.
Stay tuned for more of the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Good morning, St. Louis. 30 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Open from American Express. Eastbound 44 Kings Highway, there's an incident that's been cleared. However, there may be some delays. Northbound 270 at 44 in Marshall, look for traffic to be flowing freely. Eastbound 70 at 370 in the Blanchett Bridge looks good. And westbound 270 from 255 all the way to Chain of Rocks looks good. Westbound 5570 on the Poplar Street Bridge, no problems there. Eastbound 44 from 141 through 270 looks good. Westbound 40 between McCausland and Hanley looks good. And you have some ongoing construction projects, so just use caution and slow down through those work zones. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Open from American Express. Open, how American Express serves small business. To learn more, visit open.com or call 1-800-NOW-OPEN. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. For today, partly sunny, high in the lower 50s. This evening, partly cloudy, low in the mid-30s. Thursday, partly sunny early in the morning, mostly cloudy throughout the day with a high in the 50s. And Friday, cloudy, chance of showers in the morning. Showers and thunderstorms are possible in the afternoon with a high around the 50s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have clouds. Our current temperature is 36. Lambert Field is reporting 36 as well. Stay tuned for more of the best of the Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Call Akbar Electrical for any of your residential or commercial electrical service needs. Mention this ad for a discount. Akbar, 382-2568, 314-382-2568.
Hi, this is now Hall of Famer Wade Boggs, and I'd like to talk to you about another exclusive group that I belong to that has changed my life. I'm talking about the thousands of guys who, just like me, have decided to take control of their hair loss and regrow their hair permanently with the pros at Medical Hair Restoration. The best thing about this club is that you see the rewards every day. Having my hair back has made me look and feel younger than I have in years. And that's the ultimate vote of confidence.
If you're balding or thinning, Medical Hair Restoration, the nation's leader in microsurgical hair transplantation, wants to send you a free DVD package explaining just how easy and painless their hair replacement procedure is. Call 800-410-1832. That's 800-410-1832. Take control of your hair loss and get this free information package sent to you with tons of before and after pictures and testimonials. There's no cost, no obligation. Call 800-410-1832. That's 800-410-1832.
Make your holiday exciting by celebrating Christmas New Orleans style.
Come for the food.
Come for the art.
Come for the history.
Come for the sweet sounds of jazz.
Visit NewOrleansOnline.com to plan a December getaway filled with Revillon feasts, free concerts, French Quarter shopping, and all the excitement of Harrah's Casino. And make it last with discounted hotel rates, courtesy of Papa Noel himself. Visit NewOrleansOnline.com today to get your free guide with more than $2,400 in coupons and jazz up your December New Orleans style.
Come for the fun.
Come feel good.
Come for the beauty. Come for the
spirit, heart, and soul.
Come for it all.
Come fall in love with New Orleans all over again.
Discover Christmas New Orleans style at NewOrleansOnline.com.
For the issues that matter most to you, of course, it's AM 920 WGNU. This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA.
What you need to know, when you need to know it. The award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Now more of the best of the Liz Brown Show, The Wake-Up Call, right now. Right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Welcome back, welcome back. Welcome back to The Wake-Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. And before we get back to our guest, I want to remind everyone that we're coming home again. We're going to Africa again. This time, South Africa and Ghana, July 7th through the 25th. We need you to get your deposits in by April 1st. Please call 866-719-3243. That's 866-719-3243. We will be giving away a free trip. We will be doing a drawing of those that have paid their deposits for this trip to South Africa and Ghana, July 7th through the 20th. So why don't you join us? Please join us. It's going to be so much fun. It's going to be such a wonderful opportunity. Call 866-719-3243. This is Liz Brown, and this is The Wake-Up Call. You can email me at Liz Brown, L-I-Z-Z-B-R-O-W-N, at sbcglobal.net. Please don't forget, we are broadcasting live on the World Wide Web, as we do every day, at WGNU.net. That's www.WGNU.net. Listen to us live on the World Wide Web. We are talking this morning about the execution of juveniles, the fact that the Supreme Court abolished on March 1st the death penalty for juveniles. Prior to this decision by the United States Supreme Court, there were a number of inmates on death row who were juveniles when their crimes were committed. Texas had 29, Alabama had 14, Mississippi had 5, Arizona had 4, Louisiana had 4, North Carolina had 4, Florida had 3, South Carolina 3, Georgia 2, Pennsylvania 2, Nevada 1, Virginia 1. This is Liz Brown. I am now talking to Sue Vaughn, director of Amnesty International's program to abolish the death penalty, joining us from Washington, D.C. And joining us at this part of the hour is David Elliott, communications director for the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty, also joining us from Washington, D.C. David, welcome to the conversation.
Well, good morning, Liz.
And Sue, on our way out, prior to the break, we were talking about the issue of race and how it impacts on the decision of who gets executed. And our last guest spoke to it from a Missouri perspective. Talk to us about it from a national perspective.
Yeah, Margaret was absolutely correct. The probability of getting the death penalty for if the victim is victim is white goes up almost three times. Three times as likely to get the death penalty if your victim is white. That's one part of the equation. The point that Margaret didn't make, because she left early, was that the criminal justice system is biased, racially and socioeconomically biased, almost from the outset. So from the time who gets arrested, how they get sentenced, what kind of counsel they have access to.
Why they get stopped.
There are so many, at so many different stages of the game, there's such rampant bias that once you come to the actual sentencing phase, it's almost a done deal. if you're poor and if you're a person of color. So, you know, the death penalty, I mean, Amnesty International, while we had a two-year campaign specifically targeting the execution of juvenile offenders, we're an abolitionist organization. We believe that the death penalty is the ultimate violation of someone's human rights, no matter what the case, no matter what the crime. And one of the reasons we believe this is that the death penalty system is administered by fallible human beings. So in no utopian, you know, way could it ever be equitable or fair or not capricious or not arbitrary. And I'll let my colleague David, hi David, you know, kind of add to some of the comments that I've made.
And David, what I'd like to ask you is, what, how difficult was this battle to get this country to abolish the execution of juveniles for your organization, the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty?
It was a long battle. There were a number of anti-death penalty groups, including Amnesty International, including the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty, who were involved. But there were also a number of groups who take no position on the death penalty overall, but merely think that the execution of juvenile offenders is unacceptable in our society. We had groups such as the American Bar Association, which does not officially oppose capital punishment, but they came on board because they did not think that juvenile offender executions were appropriate. We also had a number of other religious organizations and medical organizations, you know, children's welfare organizations come forward, and they submitted their own friend of the court briefs to the Supreme Court arguing that this practice is wrong and must be ended. And, you know, when the Supreme Court handed down its very historic ruling last week, they agreed with us. They confirmed what we all know and what science recently has proven. Kids are different. Kids are different from adults and by their very nature cannot qualify as the worst of the worst standard that we use to, at least some people use, to justify a sentence of death.
Now, David, when we talk about this decision that came down, this historic decision that came down, it was not a unanimous decision. Anthony Scalia wrote a dissenting opinion on that. Talk to us about what were his grounds for dissenting on this?
Well, you know, there were a number of different grounds. His opinion was, as his opinions tend to be, somewhat scathing. He disagreed that there was actually a strong national consensus against executing juvenile offenders. He also took issue with the fact that Justice Kennedy, in his majority opinion, noted that virtually every country around the world has abandoned this practice. Scalia argued, well, you know, should we really be guided by what all of the other countries in the world do? And I think that in this day and age, we should be guided by what other countries do.
I'm sorry for laughing, because that is really just astounding.
It is, and to add to David's point, I mean, the Constitution of the U.S. Of the United States is very firmly grounded in British common law, and has had international, you know, influences right from its very, you know, inception. So to say that the United States Constitution is just sort of interpreted in a vacuum is misguided, you know, at the very least.
And to say that, well, we don't care that most of the world doesn't kill children, should we really be looking at that? Should we really be looking at what the rest of the world is doing with regard to children? That's really, that's astounding.
I agree.
Was he alone in that? Was it just Anthony Scalia's position, or was it also some other justices that joined him on that, David?
It was actually two other justices who joined him on that particular point, those being Justice Clarence Thomas and Justice Rehnquist. Justice Sandra Day O'Connor wrote a separate opinion in which she said that she would actually take into account, she would acknowledge international opinion regarding this practice. However, she disagreed that a strong consensus had emerged opposing the juvenile death penalty in the U.S. So it was you know, altogether it was kind of a complicated, complex cross-current of opinions that came down from the court. But thankfully we did prevail, and a solid, if narrow, majority did find the concept to be unconstitutional.
Well, given the history of the back and forth of yes, we can execute, no, we can't execute, nature of this court, we have to take a break, but I would like both of you to address when we come back, do we have other cases that are coming up that may turn this case around, that may challenge this case? My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. We are taking a break. I'm talking to Sue Vaughn, the director of Amnesty International's program to abolish the death penalty, and David Elliott, communications director for the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. We're talking about the Supreme Court's recent decision, I believe that was on March 2nd, to abolish the death penalty for juveniles. I will be back. Stay with us.
You're listening to the best of the Wake Up Call. More to return.
Invite you to listen to my radio show, Radio UFO, Uncommon Facts and Observations. We have so much information to share with you about sightings and medical and scientific breakthroughs that we extended this program another night. Now we're on every Friday and Saturday at midnight. So do something different. Listen to a new kind of talk show, Uncommon Facts and Observations, every Friday and Saturday night at midnight, only on AM 920 WGNU.
Prizes awarded on WGNU will be held for pickup at the radio station for 30 days. After 30 days, all items become the sole property of WGNU Radio to be disposed of at our discretion. In the case of event tickets, tickets will be held for 30 days or until the date of the event, whichever comes first. Prizes must be picked up at our studios, which are located at 265 Union Boulevard in St. Louis, unless otherwise specified.
It's time for a WGNU Global News Update. I'm Peyton Colston. Dateline Washington, D.C. reports have an unidentified Pentagon official saying the U.S. will send 3,500 additional troops to Kuwait to stand ready for use in Iraq. The call forward force was requested by General John Abizaid, head of the Middle Eastern Military Command, and must be approved by new Defense Secretary Robert Gates. However, the anonymous Defense Department official says the troop movement may be announced as soon as tomorrow. Meanwhile, the Pentagon is considering recruiting more foreign nationals to serve in the U.S. military. The Boston Globe reports the Pentagon officials are considering opening recruitment centers overseas. Also being considered is putting foreign nationals who serve in the U.S. Armed Forces on a so-called fast track to American citizenship. Critics of the idea caution that hiring more foreigners could leave the U.S. open to criticism that it's using mercenaries to fight its wars. Also, they warn of a compromised national security. The number of foreign nationals in the U.S. military has grown from about 750 in 2001 to 4,600 last year. I'm Peyton Colston, and that's your WGNU Global News Update for this hour.
Hi, I'm Lorraine Davis, home mortgage consultant with Wells Fargo.
And I'm Jacques Land with the 100 Black Men of Metropolitan St. Louis.
And we're the host of Let's Get Wealthy, investing in more ways than one.
We'll discuss home ownership as a means to build wealth, create positive personal finances, stabilize our neighborhoods, and acquire the American dream.
Tune into our show, Let's Get Wealthy, every Wednesday at 11 a.m. to get some food for thought during your lunch hour. Sponsored by the 100 Black Men of Metropolitan St. Louis, Wells Fargo Housing Foundation, and produced by the Platinum Group.
The struggle for fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
More of the Wake Up Call on the way, the best of, right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number, 454 6609 is my fax, and my toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. Please don't forget, we are going to Africa July 7th through the 20th. Join us when the wake-up call goes back to Africa. This time we're going to South Africa and Ghana. We need your deposit by April 1st. Please call 866-719-3243. That's 866-719-3243. 866-719-3243. It's going to be a wonderful tour, July 7th through the 20th. You'll get to see the slave dungeons. We'll get to see South Africa. We will visit where Nelson Mandela was kept imprisoned. It's going to be a wonderful, wonderful tour. So join us. We need your deposit, and we will also be doing a drawing from those of you that have paid your deposit for one free trip with us to South Africa and Ghana. That number again is 866-719-3243. We are talking this morning to Sue Vaughn, director of Amnesty International Program to Abolish the Death Penalty, and David Elliott, Communications Director for the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. And I would like to remind our audience that in 1972, Furman versus Georgia eliminated the death penalty. 1976, Gregg versus Georgia, the death penalty returned. And in 1988, Thompson versus Oklahoma, the court decides that people younger than 16 when they committed a crime may not be executed. And in 1989, Stanford versus Kentucky, the justices upheld the constitutionality of executing juveniles older than 15. And I'd like to ask my guests, are we firm on this latest decision by the Supreme Court, or will we be back on this issue again?
Well, Liz, on the one hand, what the Supreme Court can give, the Supreme Court can take away. The slim possibility does exist that a future court, even more conservative than this one, could undo this historic decision. But that said, it's relatively rare for the U.S. Supreme Court to go backwards on Eighth Amendment cases, cruel and unusual punishment cases. So I think that you will never again see a juvenile offender executed in the United States.
Sue.
I agree with David, and I think the clarification needs to be made that in 1972, what Furman did was it did not abolish the death penalty or say that it was cruel and unusual. What it said was that the way in which the states administered the death penalty was unfair, and the states needed to get in line. I think this decision in Roper is much more unequivocal in that it just says that executing those who are under 18 constitutes cruel and unusual punishment. And, you know, while I do agree with David that, you know, there's a very slim possibility that, you know, something like this could be reverted, I really don't think that there will be any going back. And moreover, I think, you know, within U.S. society and within the rest of the international community, this practice is so exceptional and so out of date that I really don't think that the United States, you know, wants to sort of go back to a place where it's, you know, categorized with some of the worst human rights offenders in the world. So I think in terms of, you know, trying to sort of reclaim its status as someone, as a country that does, you know, respect people's human rights, I think that this decision is going to stand.
So what's the next battleground? This was a concerted effort with a lot of organizations that are against the death penalty, the ceasing of the execution of juveniles. What's the next battlefront on those that are opposed to the death penalty? David.
Well, you know, Liz, as favorable as this ruling was, and it was quite favorable, quite historic, it is important to point out that the center of gravity for the anti-death penalty movement has really shifted from the steps of the Supreme Court to the state capitals. You've got organizers in Missouri, in other states, fighting for moratoriums, fighting for other types of reforms, fighting for abolition altogether. And that's where the action is going to be. You know, just yesterday evening, a legislative committee in Connecticut, approved a bill abolishing the death penalty. Last week in New Mexico, the New Mexico House of Representatives approved a bill abolishing the death penalty. That bill now goes to the Senate for its consideration. And so we're going to see a state-by-state, you know, drawn-out battle where activists are getting organized and they're talking to their legislators, they're educating the public, and that's how ultimately the death penalty will be abolished in the U.S.
Here in Missouri, we have the sad situation where the very first thing that our young governor did when he was elected was to make the argument that we hadn't been killing enough people, and he wanted to step up the pace of our executions. And Sue, I go back to you.
Yeah, and I said, I mean, this is a very, you know, short-term political tactic that many politicians sort of use, but I think what David said is right. You know, on the one hand, you have the governor in Missouri, but on the other hand, you have the governor in Illinois, Governor Ryan, who, you know, saw, I think, you know, even people who are not sort of morally opposed to death penalty, when they see the flaws in the system, and I think that's our next and our ongoing battle is to educate the public, is to educate legislators that, you know, the death penalty might, you know, you might, one might not be morally opposed to the death penalty, but just the way it's administered can never, ever, ever be fair because it's administered by fallible human beings. And, you know, we've had, you know, over 100 people exonerated who came within minutes of being executed in some cases.
Now, can either one of you answer this question for me, because we have about 30 seconds left here. Has there been an innocent person executed in the United States?
Liz, some experts believe that in what we call the modern era, the past quarter of a century, as many as 24 people, innocent people, have been executed. We don't have solid, absolute DNA-based proof of that. I think maybe in coming years we will. But certainly, as Sue has pointed out, the system is unfair, it's arbitrary, it's capricious, it must be abolished.
And Sue, I'd like you to give our audience your website where people can go and find more information about your organization and your efforts.
Thank you, Liz. The website is www.aiusa.org.
And David, your website, please.
It's www.ncadp.org. Again, that's ncadp.org.
Sue Vaughn, David Elliott, thank you so much for joining us on the Wake Up Call this morning.
Thank you, Liz.
Thank you, Liz.
Get ready for more of the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU after the top of the hour news, weather, and your traffic. This is AM 920 WGNU.
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, how do you sustain? I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Power. Nobody is going to give it to you.
people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother,
but the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
So we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albiner.
Americans will always admire Gerald Ford's unflinching performance of duty.
You may have awakened this morning to hear President Bush talking about the late Gerald Ford, the nation's 38th president, died last night. He was the only U.S. president or vice president who was not elected to either office. Then President Nixon appointed Mr. Ford to replace Vice President Spiro Agnew. He is credited with helping the nation unite after the Vietnam War defeat. More from ABC's Charles Gibson.
He talked at that time in a speech that was very important, like Abraham Lincoln saying we must bind up the nation's wounds and look forward after Vietnam. And he really did transition us.
Mr. Ford also pardoned his predecessor. That is a decision ABC's Sam Donaldson says may have cost him the 1976 election.
He had a 71% approval rating up to that point, and it plummeted. I mean, the whole country was upset. They wanted Nixon to have to pay for what he had done. And Ford, by pardoning him, explained, I thought it better that the nation's business be conducted, and we could not conduct it if we spent the next few years worrying about Richard Nixon.
The Ford family has yet to announce its funeral arrangements, but Mr. Ford will in all likelihood be buried at his presidential library in Grand Rapids, Michigan. These people were there early today to pay their final respects.
He was a wonderful president and led us at a very, very difficult time, and I'll always remember him for that.
Even though he wasn't voted in, he was really nice, a real nice president.
He was very dignified and helped the nation heal.
Gerald Ford was 93. It's still not clear whether the U.S. military will turn custody of Saddam Hussein over to Iraqi authorities. Iraq's highest court upheld Saddam's death threat yesterday, saying he must be executed within the next 30 days. The Bush administration is reportedly ready to add the polar bear to the list of endangered species. The Interior Secretary could make it official later today. ABC News Money Scope, the Dow is up 75 points in early going, and the NASDAQ is ahead 14. This is ABC News.
I'm a mother of three. I'm a three-time Wimbledon champion. And I'm just beginning a whole new career. And whether you're an active mom or a pro athlete, we all face the same threat to our lives and health, osteoporosis. That's why I take CitraCal calcium supplements, because bone loss and osteoporosis are not going to slow me down. I'm Chris Ever. I'm 51. And I am strong.
Tell us about a strong woman you know at StandStrong.com. CitraCal calcium. Stand strong.
Okay, honey, this one's for you.
It's a new Tundra!
It only happens once a year. Toyota-thon is on, and your Toyota dealer is the perfect place to unwrap a few of your favorite things.
It's a Corolla!
It's Toyota-thon, the time to save on many of the Toyotas you've been wishing for.
4Runner, with an available 260-horsepower VVT-i V8.
This is your opportunity for year-end savings. Check out Camry, Motor Trend 2007 Car of the Year. The Toyota-thon sales event. Hurry, time is running out.
Come January 2nd, you'll probably be thinking about shedding a few pounds. Well, here's a novel thought. Don't put it on in the first place. You can.
The average person gains a pound between Thanksgiving and New Year's, but that's the average.
Some people gain quite a lot, 4, 5, 6 pounds.
Dr. David Katz, an ABC News medical contributor, has some common sense tips First, avoid run-of-the-mill junk foods.
Just because they're sitting out and it's the holiday season doesn't mean you have to eat them.
Save your appetite for the really good stuff and watch the alcohol intake.
Maybe you'll have a drink, which will then disinhibit you, and you're off to the races.
Dr. Katz says use free time to exercise, dance, to burn calories. Stephen Portnoy, ABC News.
Wanted, about 5,000 elementary school students who go to public schools in Spokane, Washington. Two researchers want them to take part in a project they hope will reverse the rising epidemic of obesity in kids. It would keep school gyms open in the evening and on weekends so families can work out together. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
This WGNU News report is brought to you by Chaser Plus. I'm Peyton Colston. In Kansas City, a man's in custody after allegedly holding police at bay for a while last evening. 27-year-old Eric Thompson is accused of stabbing his estranged wife Saturday in Maryville, Illinois, just northeast of St. Louis. Acting on a tip, officers found Thompson at his home in Kansas City. There was a brief standoff, after which the suspect was taken into custody. He faces extradition to Illinois, where he's expected to be charged with attempted murder. Local retailers are benefiting from shoppers wanting to spend their holiday gift cards. Julie Neiman, an analyst for Smith Moore & Company, says 40% of all holiday gift cards are spent in the first few weeks after Christmas. She notes retailers have been watching their inventory very carefully and are putting sales on items that didn't move. Senior citizens are advised to make getting their eyes checked a New Year's resolution. Dr. David Dyer, a retina specialist in Kansas City, says seniors are especially at risk of a condition called wet age-related macular degeneration, also known as wet AMD. Over 15,000 people in the St. Louis area have wet AMD, according to health statistics. New medications have proven successful in treating the condition marked by blurred and distorted vision or even blank spots in the vision field. Finally, at this hour, an ailing sixth grader from Lake Villa, Illinois, had a special Christmas, courtesy of a rock star better known for his love of giant spiders. 12-year-old C.J. Cardenas, a major Alice Cooper fan, is recovering from cancer surgery in a North Chicago hospital. His mom contacted Cooper recently and told him about her son's illness. The rocker replied by sending C.J. a blue Fender guitar autographed with the message, "C.J., you rock." Doctors and his mother say the present's been the perfect medicine for the boy, lifting him out of a lingering depression. That's WGNU News, brought to you by Chaser Plus. Do Chaser hangover pills really work? Yes! Chaser absorbs toxins to help stop hangovers. Take it while you drink to help you wake up feeling great. Buy Chaser at Walgreens, CVS, and GNC. Please drink responsibly. Don't drink and drive. I'm Peyton Colston with WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Open from American Express. Northbound 270 to 44 on Marshall. Traffic still flowing freely at this hour. Eastbound 70 from 370 to Blanchett Bridge. It looks good. Westbound 270 from 255 into the chain of Rocks Bridge. No problems to report there. Westbound 5570 at the PSB is looking good. Eastbound 44 from 141 through 270 is on the move. Westbound 40 between McCausland and Hanley, look for no delays. And all your approaches into the Poplar Street Bridge as well as the King Bridge, you can expect no delays rolling into downtown at this hour. There are some ongoing construction sites, so just use caution and slow down through those work zones. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Open from American Express. Open, how American Express serves small business. To learn more, visit open.com or call 1-800-NOW-OPEN for more details. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. For today, look forward to partly sunny skies, high in the lower 50s this evening, partly cloudy, low in the mid-30s. Thursday, partly sunny in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy throughout the day with a high in the mid-50s. And then Friday, look forward to clouds in the morning. Showers and thunderstorms are possible by the afternoon with a high in the upper 50s. Currently, we have 36 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 36 as well. Liz Brown is out today. Stay tuned for more of the best of the wake-up call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the top of the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Hearing revolution in the air.
Welcome back, welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. And there are many of you out there that have been... That there have been attempts to relegate you to the fringe, to relegate you to the conspiracy nut type of an individual, largely because you raise the red flag about our government's going to put in place a national ID card. There's a shadow government going on that is above the law and doesn't have to adhere to the rule of law or our Constitution. And those of you that advocated such things in various forms were minimized and marginalized in terms of that is not happening. This is America. That could never happen in America. Well, maybe yes, maybe no.
I'm looking at a newsletter. The House of Representatives voted 243 to 179 to reject an amendment. To reject an amendment that would have stripped Section 102 from the Real ID Act of 2005. The bill, as passed, would empower the Secretary of Homeland Security to waive any federal laws without limit in the course of building barriers along the nation's borders. Be concerned, be very concerned to talk about this bill, to talk about the ramifications of this bill. I have as a guest with me this morning, Marshall Fitz. Marshall Fitz, the Associate Director of Advocacy, American Immigration Lawyers Association, joining us from Washington, D.C. Good morning, Marshall.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good, thanks.
Excuse me. Talk to us about this bill. Should we be concerned? Should we be very concerned?
I think we should be extremely concerned, despite really resounding opposition from across the political spectrum, conservative organizations, faith-based organizations, state governments, human rights groups, immigrants' rights groups, environmental organizations, national security experts, and international entities have all very vocally, very forcefully opposed this measure. And the reason there's such a wide cross-section of opposition is that there's such a wide-ranging cast of provisions in here that affect various parts of our legal system in ways that are, in some cases, unprecedented. You just mentioned the waiver of all laws related to building the security barriers.
Talk about that, because this is really, again, what people, there are some people out there that have been predicting this type of a thing coming at us. But here we have it. We have the Homeland Security with this unbelievable, Homeland Security Department with this unbelievable power. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, they really already do have really sweeping power, and you know, I think as individuals we have to kind of just put our faith and trust that they're going to wield that power fairly and consistent with the Constitution, because we don't have very strong checks on them right now. Congressional oversight has been very much lacking. The courts have finally started weighing in with some of the policies, particularly the detention policies related to the post 9/11 detentions. But these types of statutory proposals, legislative proposals, really take us, I think, even further down a road. Pardon me, a road where we will really be faced with unchecked executive power, and I think we should all be wary of any bill that basically says it waives all laws, federal, state, and local, related to the construction of a fence that this is not just one little stretch near San Diego. This is the entire U.S.-Mexico border, the entire U.S.-Canada border. That's a sweeping waiver, and it also strips any judicial review, any type of review of the Secretary of Homeland Security's waiver of these laws.
Why would you need to have a bill that says you don't have to follow any law? What is it that you're trying to do that you would need that?
Well, I mean, the proponents of the measure say they've been foiled in their attempts to build this one small section of this fence near San Diego because of some environmental laws that are, they're in the process of negotiating ways to kind of do this in an environmentally friendly way without destroying habitats, et cetera. But there already is a waiver of many of the environmental laws. This, though, would go so far as to waive. It could waive child labor laws. I mean, it could waive anything, and it's not just right at the border. It's constructing a security fence in the vicinity of the border. And the,
so, and also, it could waive criminal laws. If you were raped there, and the person that raped you was an employee, a person putting up the fence, they could say that the laws don't apply.
They could certainly try to pursue a line of argumentation down that road. Absolutely. So you understand their interest in trying to construct this fence. That you understand their frustration that it's taken them this long to just do, I think, about 14 miles of fence so far. But you know, this type of legislative response is wholly uncalled for.
And where is this bill? Is it done?
It's passed the House of Representatives, despite the opposition of all those interest groups that I mentioned, by 261 to 161 votes, so a 100-vote margin, which I just think is incredible.
And that's a lot of Democrats, isn't it?
What's that?
That's a lot of Democrats, isn't it?
Oh, it was actually mostly... mostly Republicans.
But there were some Democrats in there.
There were a few scattered in there, but
okay.
it was primarily a party line vote.
Mm-hmm.
Once the amendments failed, and I think you mentioned that in your opening as
right.
well, once the amendments failed, many, I think, representatives felt like, well, there were some provisions in there that they supported, some that they didn't, and they cowed and didn't stand on principle and opposed the whole thing outright. But you know, and you understand, I guess, that there does tend to be significant support for some of these provisions among the American public, and I think it's because of a lack of education, quite frankly, on what these provisions really do. Everyone says, okay, well, you just want to make it easier for them to build a fence, fine, but if you understand the implications of waiving every single law, it's unprecedented.
And Marshall, if we can just break this down,
sure.
We're talking about environmental laws, we're talking about public health laws, we're talking about consumer laws, workplace safety, unfair business practices, discrimination laws.
Yes, everything.
Every kind of law that exists on our books, none of them would apply to this act.
That's right.
And then how concerned should we be that if this bill goes through and if the Department of Homeland Security is allowed to waive all laws, how concerned should we be that this president will then start to move to other places that are going to ask for the ability to waive all the laws?
I think that's the real danger. I think you hit the nail on the head. The concern, it's probably fairly remote possibility that all of those laws that we're discussing would be implicated in building this fence. You know, it's more likely that the laws that would end up getting waived would be the environmental laws. And you know, there could be certainly some serious problems around the edges. But the precedent that it sets that, oh, okay, well, we're having trouble, getting around the rule of law, so we're just going to waive them all. that's an extraordinary proposition.
And what would stop the Department of Education from asking for some components of that? What would stop any other department from asking for certain components of this?
Yes, that's exactly right.
And I think that the issue of discrimination is one that I really think that could be part of this in terms of who gets picked to build this fence. The millions of dollars of contracts that will go into the building of this fence, if they don't have to adhere to any kind of discrimination laws, they can give it to it. They can give it to the truly. They could have the Good Old Boy Association building this fence,
as well as discriminating on which land gets taken by the the officials who are trying to construct this. You know, they could focus on the Latino families in the area and take their land as opposed to the, you know, the big rancher. So absolutely, it's a recipe for some serious trouble.
Without an articulation of that, we really, really need this.
That's right.
So let's go on to other components of
sure.
this, because that, as scary as that is, that's not all there is.
No, that's not.
Let's talk about the national ID card.
Yeah, you know, the weird thing about the driver's license provision is that they just passed a driver's license provision 2 months ago as part of the intelligence reorganization bill that the president signed in December. That provision, while we were not necessarily gung-ho about, at least it created a consultative process between the federal government and the state governments. I mean, the state governments, they're in the business of issuing driver's licenses, and there was a recognition because of 9/11 that there is some need for minimum federal standards, but that's very, very different from what this bill proposes. This bill basically forces the federal government's view on what driver's licenses should be and look like right down the state's throats, and the states have no say in it. The states are very opposed to this, by the way. The National Governors Association is opposed to this bill. The National Council of State Legislatures is opposed to the bill. So, you know, I think the states are really feeling like here's the federal government, you know, ramming this unfunded mandate down our throat that we probably can't even do they probably can't actually even meet the requirements that this bill would set forth. And so it's a very strange initiative, particularly in the wake of having just passed an unprecedented driver's license provision less than 2 months ago.
And what I'd like to do is to talk about some of the details. You mentioned that this driver's license bill would amount to an unfunded mandate for the states. Tell us what you mean by that. How would that work?
Well, it places certain restrictions on the states. It forces them to authenticate, for example, it forces them to authenticate certain documents like birth certificates. Now, anyone who's had trouble at the DMV and waited in seemingly interminable lines will brace yourself, because you'll be waiting a lot longer. They've got restrictions in here on who the licenses can be issued to, what the process has to be for authenticating the documents. I don't know if you know where your birth certificate is. Mine's in a drawer somewhere, and you know, it hasn't seen the light of day in a long time. And there are several hundred million similarly situated birth certificates. How the local DMVs around each state and around the country are going to be able to authenticate those documents is a mystery.
Well, I also I took a tour to Ghana last year,
uh-huh.
and we had one member of our group that was attempting to get her passport, and where she was born, they didn't have the copies of her birth certificate. So
uh-huh.
she had a very, very difficult time. She had to go find somebody who could orally verify that they were there at her birth to verify that she was born. Now, states are going to have to deal with that issue too, just to get a driver's license?
Yes. So it's sweeping. You know, the way it's been talked about has really been, well, this what this does doesn't create a national ID. All it does is restrict the availability of driver's licenses for undocumented immigrants. That's pretty much the way that the proposal has been framed, at least by the proponents on the Hill. Now, you know, national security experts have told us repeatedly that, well, if that's what you want to do for purposes of immigration policy, if you want to, you know, have this punitive approach to restricting driver's licenses for non-citizens, then fine. But don't cast it as a national security imperative, because clearly this is not going to promote national security. It's going to undermine national security, because if you drive people deeper into the shadows, you don't know who is here. And the driver's license databases are one of the most effective law enforcement tools available, because they have the basic information about the people who are residing in a particular area.
And one more thing, because we have to take a break here.
Sure.
You talked about the seemingly endless lines at the Driver's License Bureau when you are trying to get your driver's licenses renewed. According to this bill, all the licenses would expire at the same time?
Yeah, exactly.
So what kind of line would that be? What kind of line would we have to stand in if every driver's license in the nation expired on the same day?
I know. And the notion that we would all of us, you know, 150 million driver's license holders would need to get new licenses under this.
At the same time?
Yes. The enormity of the process and the bureaucratic hurdles is staggering.
We have to take a break. I'm talking to Attorney Marshall Fitz, Associate Director of Advocacy American and Immigration Lawyers Association, joining us from Washington, D.C. We're talking about the Real ID Act of 2005. My name is Liz Brown. This is The Wake Up Call. Stay with us. We'll be back.
You're listening to the best of The Wake Up Call. More to come following these messages.
Kinderleiter, host of Lessons in Leadership. Whether you're an executive, manager, teacher, volunteer leader, or head of a family, this show is for you. You'll get practical tips from real leaders on topics that matter to you. Tune in every Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock to Lessons in Leadership.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
People can't stop talking about the remarkable results they get with their Bowflex Tread Climber machine.
I lost over 20 pounds working out on the Tread Climber.
I've lost almost 10 inches off my waist.
The Bowflex Tread Climber machine combines the stepping motion of a stepper with the walking motion of a treadmill. It's the low-impact way to burn up to twice the calories of a treadmill at the same speed.
It's really strengthened my core, my abs, and there's no impact on my joints.
Call 1-800-888-7635 for a free information. DVD.
I'm in better shape now than I was 20 years ago.
Get a Bowflex Tread Climber machine for no money down and payments as low as $24 a month.
I'm 40 and I am in the best shape of my adult life.
Be lean, be fit, be Bowflex. For a free DVD, call 1-800-888-7635.
1-800-888-7635. On approved BoFlex credit card purchases, monthly payment is 1.5% of the purchase plus any late fee. The number of months you pay and total amount of minimum monthly payments depends on additional purchase and account balances. Call for details.
Hi, I'm Randy Grimm. Join me Friday morning at 11 for Animal Tales on AM 920 WGNU. 2 hours of fur, friends, and fun as we discuss the issues that matter most to you and your companion animals. Animal Tales, Friday morning at 11 on AM 920 WGNU. Woof.
Real life, on the cutting edge. It's the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Now back to the best of the Wake-Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Wake-Up Call. We are talking about the Real Act, the Real ID Act of 2005. I have with me Attorney Marshall Fitz to talk about that, joining us from Washington, D.C. And Marshall, if you could tell us a little bit about your organization, please.
Sure. The American Immigration Lawyer Association, it's a nonprofit bar association of over 9,000 attorneys and law professors. And what I do here is work in the national office, and we work in trying to promote fair and just immigration policies.
And this Real ID Act of 2005, we've talked about the one scary component of it, the waiving of the laws. We've talked about also this idea of a driver's license and unfunded mandates that it puts on the states. That's not all that's to this act, is it?
No, not at all, unfortunately. If that wasn't bad enough, really one of the most disturbing parts of this bill are the restrictions that it places on asylum seekers, people who are fleeing persecution in their homeland and who have envisioned the United States as a refuge from that persecution. And this provision, without any justification at all, the proponents continue to talk about it as a national security imperative. But all this does is raise the bar for legitimate asylum seekers. And
explain that.
Sure. Well, it's kind of technical, and so you can stop me if it's not totally clear. But the key is right now you have to prove that your persecution was on account of one of five enumerated grounds. You have to show that you were persecuted on account of your race, religion, social group, membership, political opinion, or nationality. Now, what this does is this ramps it up and requires that you prove that one of those grounds was the central reason for your persecution. This is significant because, obviously, people fleeing persecution don't have, you know, time to get a note from their persecutor, and it's hard enough to demonstrate motive in this context at all. And so the law currently only requires that you show that the persecution was in part because of one of those grounds. The new proposal would require that you show that one of those grounds is the central reason for the persecution.
Well, Marshall, what would be the evidence of that? What would be the evidence that this was a central part of the prosecution's case? And how on earth would anybody get that information? I can't get that information until after a trial.
Yeah, it would be extraordinarily difficult. It would indeed, I think, it's already the biggest hurdle for asylum seekers, you know, proving that it's on account of one of that they were persecuted on account of one of those grounds. But to prove centrality, I think, is going to make it maybe virtually impossible for a large number of people. Think about these types of cases where someone gets raped and a minority group, ethnic group, a woman's family is targeted, and she is raped repeatedly by people from the ethnic majority. They flee. She's able to prove that she was raped and beaten. But can she prove that she was raped and beaten primarily because of her ethnicity is a minority is a member in a minority ethnic group, or you know, will the judge say no, she was raped because you know these were bad guys and they wanted to have sex with this woman?
And what would be the evidence of that was their major reason for raping her? What kind of evidence would you have to demonstrate that?
You really have to
outside of a confession from from the person that's abusing you.
Yes, it's hard to figure out what that would be. And certainly everyone who represents asylum seekers, I mean, the religious organizations across the board are the evangelical organizations, the Catholics, the Jewish groups. Everybody is terrified that this might happen because, you know, proving religious the basis of or the rationale for the persecution was because of their religion may be virtually impossible for exactly the reason you say that. What type of evidence could one provide to demonstrate the centrality of one motive over others?
Outside of a confession.
Correct.
From your
persecutor.
From the persecutor.
Yeah, so
And the rationale behind this is what?
Well, the proponents basically keep saying that this is not a change of the law. This is just a restatement of the law. And uniformly, everyone who has practiced in the area says that is just untrue. They say that this is needed because terrorists have exploited our asylum system in the past. What they, of course, ignore is that asylum seekers are subjected to more scrutiny, more background checks than any other person coming into this country.
We know more about them than we do about anybody else that's coming in this country.
That's exactly right. And to think that raising the standard of for them to prove their asylum eligibility is going to make us safer is just ludicrous. And indeed, it's going to end up sending people back to be persecuted or killed, tortured. And if that's the case, we can be sure that our moral standing in the international community is going to continue to fall.
Well, Marshall, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but what could possibly be the real motive behind a piece of legislation like this? Legislation is not introduced without someone benefiting for it and somebody wanting this. What do you suppose the motivation is for this piece of legislation?
Oh, that's a great question. I honestly believe that many of the proponents of this legislation, not all the people who have co-sponsored, because I think a lot of the people in Congress just listen to the proponents who say, you know, this is necessary for national security, and that's as far an inquiry as they do into this, and they say, okay, if he says that, then I trust him. But I think this is really driven by people who are not friendly to immigrants, to non-citizens, who have demonstrated that lack of interest or concern for the rights of such individuals repeatedly over the years, and they are really leveraging national security fears for the purposes of passing some anti-immigrant legislation.
Well, how about this, too? Is this a possibility
that
with it so difficult for a person to come to this country and prove that they have been mistreated by another country, does this, in effect, protect some countries that the United States, the administration of the United States, the government of the United States, wants to protect those countries from the world seeing how they treat people?
Well, that's very interesting. I had not really considered that possibility, but as you well know, we do continue to engage in this rendition process where we basically whisk people out of the country and send them back to
that's a horrible, you know, we need another word than rendition because it sounds a lot cleaner than what it is. This is just kidnapping and sending people off to criminals to be brutalized.
I think that's right. I think rendition is much too sanitized a term for what happens. That's correct. So I think that the notion that we are that our government is complicit in some levels with the abuse and torture and human rights violations that go on in some of these countries is undeniable.
Would this law, if enacted, hide some of that from the American public? And would it protect our government's relationship with these countries that we send people off to be tortured?
I'm not sure, because I don't know how much the case-by-case narratives from asylum seekers kind of permeate, into the national awareness about these foreign governments. I'm not sure how much that does. I tend to think that we get more information about these governments from good reporting and from people who go beyond our government's explanations of what's happening in these countries and do the firsthand reporting themselves. But I'm not sure about that. I think it's an interesting thought and idea. I'd have to think about it some more.
Well, I want to thank you, Marshall Fitz, for bringing this information to us about the Real ID Act of 2005. If people want to find out more about it, is there a place that they can go?
Sure, absolutely. You can definitely go to our website, which is www.aila.org. That's AILA.org. And we are continually posting information and updates on the status of this legislation.
And finally, the status is?
That's an important question. It really remains in the hands of the Senate and the White House right now. The House has passed their bill. It will probably move over to the Senate as part of the, ironically enough, the Iraqi supplemental, which also has the tsunami relief provisions. But yet it's going to have this measure on attached to it as well. And so the Senate is going to have to figure out a way to strip that measure. And we're doing everything we can to help them in that effort.
Marshall Fitz, thank you so much for
Absolutely,
joining me.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thank you, Liz.
Take care. Listen, folks, we're going to take a break. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. And if you want a toll-free long-distance meeting, you can do that at 1-877-9.
You're listening to the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. More to come following these messages.
Still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At ConnectCare, we want you to know that yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At ConnectCare, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At ConnectCare, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At ConnectCare, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At ConnectCare, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At ConnectCare, we still provide urgent care. And at ConnectCare, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at ConnectCare, but we're still connected to you. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap. weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis. AM 920 WGNU.
It's time for a WGNU Global News Update. I'm Peyton Colston. Dateline, Washington, D.C., the Justice Department is building a huge database which officials say will allow local police departments to quickly retrieve data about criminal suspects. However, privacy advocates worry it's another chink in the armor that protects individual liberties. The Washington Post reports the database, called OneDOJ, already holds 1 million case files. Officials say the database will triple in size over the next 3 years. The Justice Department says the database contains criminal records from the FBI, the DEA, the Marshals Service, the Bureau of Prisons, as well as the ATF. Civil liberties groups are uncomfortable with the database because of worries it could be open to abuse. They say local police could obtain personal information about people, despite the fact that those people have not been arrested or charged with any crimes. I'm Peyton Colston, and that's another WGNU Global News Update.
This is Alan Brainerd. Join me Wednesdays at noon for Design 411 on AM 920 WGNU. No matter where you live, no matter what your lifestyle, you'll find out how to turn your ordinary home into an extraordinary home. My guests and I will give you the 411 on everything from classic design to the newest decorating trends. Join me, Alan Brainerd, for Design 411 every Wednesday at noon on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues that matter most to you and your home.
You are listening to AM 920 WGNU.
And you've been listening to the Best of the Wake Up Call. We'll return tomorrow with either Liz live in the studio or more of the Best of the Wake Up Call. Right now, we're going to finish out this hour with a few cuts from the 920 Club. Enjoy and stay tuned for the top of the hour news and your weather. This is AM 920 WGNU.
Next time you're found with your chin on the ground, there's a lot to be learned. Sure look around. Just what makes that little old ant think he'll move that rubber tree plant? Anyone knows that ants can't move a rubber tree plant, but he's got high hopes. He's got
pollution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, how can this guy?
Stay tuned for the top of the hour news and C.J. Larkin. He's up next. Take another look at your news and weather.
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember that.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, how can this end?
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
Struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.